I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of
America, and to the republic
for which it stands,
one nation,
under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everyone. I'll accept a motion to approve the minutes. I'm assuming everyone had an opportunity to read the minutes from the last meeting. That was on October 6th. And I will accept a motion to approve those minutes.
I'll make the motion.
Okay, Mary Beth and Tom, I guess.
Sure.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. All opposed? Anyone? Great. All right, so tonight we're going to get budget presentations from three departments. We're going to get information services, tourism, and employment and training. So we're going to let IS go first. That's how it's written on the agenda, so that's how it will go.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, Lisa Berger had requested if she could go first tonight. Evelyn, she had another.
Okay.
If that's okay with Ellen, does that work for you, Ellen? Thank you.
That's fine with me if it's good with everyone else. Okay, so go ahead, Lisa. Thank you. And welcome as the tourism director, by the way.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here with all of you as the tourism director. I'm going to walk you through some information about tourism in Ulster County right now. And then we can take a look at my budget. So at the proposed budget. So if we could get the next slide, Fawn, it'd be great. So I just wanted to cover with you a little bit about the tourism labor market. And I'm sure that you're all aware that the leisure and hospitality sector is the third largest overall employment sector in Ulster County. It ranks just behind Eds and Meds and retail trade as the third largest employer of our own residents. So it's important for you guys all to know that in this pandemic, the travel and leisure industry has really taken it on the chin. It's been very difficult. The shutdowns have been difficult no matter what kind of a business you're operating in the tourism and hospitality sector. And statewide, there have been more than 350,000 jobs lost, the most of any sector in the state. The good news is Ulster County's tourism and hospitality sector has largely recovered from job losses. September's loss actually only showed a 3.3% reduction in our workforce, but more importantly, our private job creation in this sector grew by 1%, which is very notable. Okay, next. Thanks, Fawn, for anticipating. You're really good at this.
Sorry.
Next slide.
Well, now I'm having a problem. Get it? There we go.
All right. So statewide, COVID caused a 73% drop in tourism spending. Currently, the state has brought in $14.4 billion in visitor spending. And for the same period last year, the state actually had $52 billion in their coffers from visitor spending. So that net loss is $38.1 billion, which is staggering to think of, and it's one of the reasons why the state is having so much difficulty. Tourism spending in Ulster County was a record $651.5 million, or half a billion, in 2018. And that was an increase of 11% over the previous year. That's the last year for which we have numbers from the state. They had numbers that they were probably ready to release, and then the pandemic hit. So we have not seen any numbers. Next slide, Fawn.
Oop, sorry.
Yep, back one. So I want to talk to you about our occupancy tax. Through the third quarter, Ulster County has collected just over $1 million. Those same three quarters in 2019 brought in $1.4 million. So we're looking at a loss of $441,000, which is 30% less than 2019. Things, though, seem to be improving as we're winding down the year. Through the second quarter, our occupancy tax was actually down 37.3%. And so if you look at where we are now at 30%, there has been a recovery. And there's an expectation that October is going to be very robust. And so that would be fourth quarter. I'd like to add in here, I don't think it's part of this slide presentation, that I also had a chance to look at some numbers that the comptroller put out, and he showed extremely good sales tax revenue for Ulster County in the month of October, I believe it was. It was a 21% increase, and that would track with what we were hearing was incredible visitation. So I just wanted to, put that out there and to say to you that when I was speaking to the director of finance about sales tax revenue to the county, he was saying that as far as drivers of sales tax, car sales is number one, then transportation, and then right behind that would be all the industries affiliated with the tourism and hospitality industry. So I just wanted to share that with you guys. As you know, we look at fourth quarter, it's going to be really weather dependent as to how we do, and consistent messaging that we're a great destination. I do think, though, that we are an attractive 2-hour drive from metropolitan New York City, Long Island, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Pennsylvania. And I also think that the governor's newest testing mandate and not having this 14-day quarantine and banned states should be helpful to visitation, especially expansion markets like Philadelphia and DC. So these are some of the results of the work that Rick and his wonderful team did last year. I think that they really speak for themselves. So Book Direct lodging referrals were up by 23%. The digital ads are performing at 120% above industry benchmark. And I just want to point out to everybody that that was a direction that the department really went into heavily last year, at the suggestion of the legislature, as well as the suggestion of the county executive. So it's really turning out quite well to take that approach. Social media is turning out again to be a good place to put our money into. And you can see overall that Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest all saw increases. And working with influencers, people who have large followings on social media, has also turned out key results for the department. So we feel as though those results, given the pandemic, are really pretty remarkable. We're very satisfied with that. Next slide. I do want to quickly here segue to the 2021 advertising and marketing contract. I'd like to let you all know that there were 14 respondents to the RFP. Two companies were interviewed, and Belo, the company that we have been working with over the past few years, the ones who created the Seek for Yourself brand, were ultimately selected. And we have before you a proposal for a contract, $382,000, and that contract, in addition to design, ad placement, and social media work, they will be redesigning our website and making it ADA compliant. And they will be working together to get our listings up in a manner that won't be so labor intensive. We're trying to put together a content management system such as Salesforce and the back end of the website, and they're playing a big role in that. And I'd also like you to know that they are helping us get prepared for an online travel guide with selected print supplements. maybe a winery and brewery trail, maybe a hiking and biking type thing. We're working with them to figure out exactly what that's going to look like and how it's going to be supported. And we want you all to know that the approach is going to be to layer digital approach after digital approach after digital approach. So that's the way we're going with Belo and with this contract. They're a full service agency. It was very much the feeling of the people who sat on that RFP that their national stature was really beneficial to the Ulster County brand. The committee also felt as though, although we saw RFPs from 14 respondents, the Belo RFP answer and their creative was head and shoulders above everybody else that we talked to. So I know that, there's usually a little bit of a little bit of questioning about, wow, there was nobody in Ulster County or in New York State who is as good as this out of market company. And I would say that there probably is, but they might be working for somebody else. We did not see anybody who is better than Belo was. Belo, hands down, gave us the best proposal, the most creative, if you will. And they are a full service agency dedicated to us, which allows them to be almost like additional hands for the department. So on to the next. I do want to let you guys be aware of some major projects that are on the horizon. After the first of the year, the Hudson House distillery will be opening, and that is in the town of Esopus. It's on 9W, and it will be overlooking the Hudson. And it's they're going to be making Star Vodka Black Creek Bourbon and Black Creek Rye. The Kingstonian has proposed 32 rooms, 8,000 square feet of commercial space that includes a restaurant and retail shops that will be important to the tourism industry. There's another accommodation in Gardner called Wildflower Farms, which is has not yet broken ground. We've spoken to them a bunch of times. That's 62 rooms, a spa, restaurant, and working farm. 119th Canal is in Ellenville. It's a boutique hotel, and they've had a wonderful summer. They've done some really great things out in Ellenville, and there's a lot of interest out in the Ellenville area for hospitality businesses, and I hope to be able to come back and tell you guys about all the things that are on the horizon sometime soon. And then Buttermilk Falls has a very large proposed project with a new hotel and a conference and event space that could fit 500 people. There'd be a working farm, a brewery, and tree houses involved there. So that's a very exciting project. I do want to cover with you quickly travel industry trends, just so that you guys know. Socially distanced, especially those centering around nature parks, forests, and outdoors, are going to dominate for next year. The RV camping and car road trip craze from this summer is going to continue. We see no downturn on that. Detailed, timely information sharing, especially about how customers are being kept safe, is of paramount importance to people who are traveling. And immersion experiences, niche and reunion travel could be new markets, depending on how we do with a vaccine, maybe. And then this is important. There's a shortened time frame between planning a trip and then going inbound to that trip, actually taking that trip. And we really think that has everything to do with people being concerned about COVID rates, about their health, about their safety, as well as how much money they have. This is an economically uncertain time for many people. So those are the travel industry trends. I do want to tell you that we are planning on putting forth an aggressively optimistic message. We are going to focus on our partnerships to leverage the money that we have with especially our partnerships with Hudson Valley Tourism and CATS and I Love New York and larger partners. And we may be reaching out and developing new partnerships with Orta, who runs Bel Air, and NYC & Co. We think that we may be able to create new partnerships there that would be beneficial to all people. And this is a big part of the next part is workforce. That is a very big focus of what we are looking at. I had a wonderful meeting along with Thomasine and some of her staff yesterday with a group who specialize in customer service training for the hospitality industry. We would like to professionalize and standardize the service that is delivered to people. But more importantly, we recognize the entry level jobs in the hospitality and tourism business very much focus on skills that are transferable. You know, everybody from banking to being a police officer to being even a counselor need to know how to de-escalate situations and deliver good customer service. And so we are exploring exactly what skills are needed, what the gap seems to be here in Ulster County, and we intend to work with OET and other partners to try to develop some training around customer service. And we believe that will benefit the entire workforce, not just the hospitality workforce. Other workforce efforts that I am looking to start have to do with making sure that we develop and define career pathways for people in this industry. It is one that is that mobility is very, very easy through without a degree. There is a wonderful program done by the National Restaurant Association that teaches people the front of the house and the back of the house where it comes to the restaurant business. And it's actually targeted for young people between the ages of 16 to 24 and returning citizens and people who've had problems with drug and alcohol before. And I'm interested in exploring that. I'm not sure that all the workforce work that I know we can do here is going to get tackled in 1 year. But we do think that this customer service training will be not just applicable to the hospitality and leisure industry, but to many other sectors as well. So I'm really looking forward to digging in and doing that work. And then that brings up my budget. This, as you can see, are the positions. We have four positions in the department. And then let's go to the next slide, which may be hard to see. The numbers are super small. So I'm here to answer any questions that you might have on the budget. Unless you want me to step you through it, which I'm happy to do. I just need to...
Yeah, I don't know if anyone can read that from here.
Yeah, Fawn, can you increase the size of that?
I don't think I can from here, but maybe I can get it in the PDF. Give me just 1 minute.
Okay, all right, that'd be great because in the PDF I can.
So does anyone?
I have the PDF up if you wanted to let me.
So does anyone on the committee have any questions right away while we're waiting for that? Legislator DeLong.
Hi.
This isn't so much about the budget. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
This is really about the marketing efforts. I'm wondering what languages our marketing efforts are going to take. Is it just English?
You know, that's a fantastic question. It's not one that I had thought of, and I'm glad that you raised it. I would say to you that what we do know because the largest single visitation place in the entire Hudson Valley is Woodbury Commons, is that they literally translate into, I think, 8 languages. And so we minimally probably should be looking at Spanish and Chinese, I would say. But that's just a guess, and it's a great question for our advertising agency.
So just a quick one, and that is, I live in New Paltz. I'm close to Twin Star Farms, and I can tell you that I've just kind of monitored it over the course of the summer. I cannot tell you how many Korean people from New Jersey and Connecticut have visited that facility. So I think it would be really wonderful to have something there that tells the Ulster County story, because I'm pretty sure those folks just come and go.
I agree with you.
And the other question has to do with what kind of work are you doing with some of the projects that you put up, such as the Buttermilk Falls, for instance?
Sure. So I became aware of the Buttermilk Falls project while I was working in economic development. And where that project is so far is in design and concept phase. He has met with the town of Marlborough supervisor. We had an initial meeting with some representatives from the IDA. He has not said that he's seeking any kind of a tax abatement. He just wanted to get people, make people aware of this project. And he wanted people to know what its design looked like, because of course it is Hudson River facing his project. So that's where we sit with it. It's a large, ambitious project, but it's one of two big, ambitious projects that Robert Pollack has in the hamlet of Milton. And the other one involves a mixed-use retail workforce housing project right on the main drag.
So, yeah, thank you. Just wondering what exactly, what role tourism plays at this point with those projects?
I think what I would say to you is understanding who they think their market is very important, and us being able to dialogue about really who they're attracting, the size and scope of their projects, how it fits in overall with other projects that are going on. A lot of times these kind of projects, Jim, are proposed after they've done some sort of feasibility study. So what I would say to you is, we aren't here to cheerlead for or against a project, but we are here to understand who it is that they think they're going to be reaching, why they think they have that market, and perhaps to share some information that they wouldn't otherwise have. I think that the other role that we play as they come closer to actual fruition, like let me use as an example the distillery in Esopus, we play a big role before the launch of a business such as that. We're the ones who are responsible for letting I Love New York know about it, making sure that the Catskill region and the Hudson Valley region is aware of it, and that all of their promotional and advertising might is able to be put towards a healthy, good launch. So that's really where we play a role.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. So there's the budget. Thank you, Fawn, for figuring out how to do this. And I guess, are there specific questions? I think if we go to the marketing, to the professional, so if we look at professional services, other fees, that is where you will find the $382 for the marketing contract. And then the rest of that money is used for marketing placement and for printing of any new kind of brochure that we might be looking to do and that kind of thing.
So real quickly, is the overall budget the same as 2020, more or less?
100,000 less, Brian.
It's 100,000 less. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Lynn, go ahead, Legislator Archer.
Yes, Lynn.
Mr. Chairman, yes, I'm just looking at kind of as of September 30th, it looks like your budget was adjusted downward in tourism by about 89,000. So as of September, and I don't know if there's anything booked, there were encumbrances and transactions of 180,000. So you're still kind of under. I don't know if there's year-end numbers that are going to show up here. But having said all of that, and then looking at the numbers for next year, can you, I know a big chunk of that is the resolution that's before us, right? We're not going to be accruing any expenses this year for that cubic contract. It's for next year, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. And so in addition to that, can you just give me a sense of what else is in that number?
In 418?
In
the line that says 430045.
Yes.
So in addition to the cubic contract, there's money in that, there's money there that would be used for us to develop an alternative to a travel guide that will primarily be online, but that will have a map. What we've heard over and over is that the map is what everybody likes about that travel guide. So like I said, we might actually create a brochure that has to do with hiking and biking trails with a map overall. There's money for that. I want you to know that there is still about 200 cases of travel guides, I think, left from last year. We would use some of that money for distribution purposes because it benefits no one for that to throw away those travel guides. We need to get them out and into people's hands, especially if it's the last one that we're going to do. And then on top of that, there's other advertising that may be done to support various initiatives of the county. And that's, and that would be what was left over. So you're looking at, you know, like I had that number. I think you're looking at about
36,000.
Yeah.
36,000.
It's not a lot. It's not a lot.
Okay.
And anything else, Lynn?
No. So the resolution before us tonight for BELO does not include a travel guide.
They're not
online travel guide.
They are not going to do the online travel guide. They're redoing our website. They're doing the advertising. They're doing creative. They're doing all of that. But they do not design an online travel guide. They're coming up with concepts for us and ideas. And, you know, if it's, and then we'll take it from there.
So the 170 as of September, do you think you're spending the rest of that money?
Oh, you know what that is? That is I Love New York matching funds money. So you have to spend that money in order to qualify for the program next year and to get your half back. So there had been some thought that the state was going to pull this program, and they are not going to pull this program.
Okay, so you will be spending what's remaining this year.
Yes, we will.
Which will bring the total to 656. And so I see. So it's about 100 and change off of that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And what did we do about ad buys during a pandemic this year? Because I almost feel like we should have seen a reduction in ad buys, and now we're planning for pretty significant ad buys into next year.
So
I'm just trying to gauge.
Yeah. My understanding is that the money was funneled into digital advertising and bringing influencers in here. And I would say that both things really paid off at the once people started to travel in. People started to travel again, really not until the middle of July. If you think about who our prime market is, they were pretty panicked until the end of June, right? But having done all that advertising, creating awareness, really, really blew us out in September and October. And so that's why we're taking this approach of making sure that each thing that we do is layered and builds on the next. So like you are advertising and promoting and putting money into Instagram, the same with Facebook, the same with Google AdWords. What you're laying over top of that is a blog post that then can get lifted. So this is the direction that we're going to move in, that the email marketing becomes more targeted and specific. That's the way that we're going to move with that. And it takes money to do those things. So, and it also
takes. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Could you also help me? How do you guys identify influencers? Is it through Belo or do you have influencers and do they get a percentage of how does that whole thing work?
So, between Belo and Steph and Fran, you're more than welcome to chime in here because I'm lucky enough to have the deputy who's been in the department and the interim director here. And I am actually remiss if I don't say that she's been an amazing professional colleague and helper. And we are really looking forward to moving forward as a strong team. And so, Fran, do you want to just quickly talk about how you identify the influencers and who we work with? Because it's a couple different partners.
Sure. In a normal year, we do have a quarterly social influencer, and this is somebody that Belo does vet for us, and they get a small percentage of what they bring in. And that's where we really see huge numbers. And the rest of the writers that come to the area are sometimes writers that reach out to us, but oftentimes Hudson Valley Regional sent to us, usually through I Love New York or Catskill Regional. So we work with the surrounding counties to do a regional trip with these writers. The majority of the ones that just come singly to do our county and not a regional trip often reach out to us ourselves, and this is usually from various different trade shows and media trips so that they have the opportunity to meet us to know if they want to come here. So we've been fortunate even through COVID now in this last quarter, especially we have had a number of smaller writers come and produce some really great stuff from the areas to which we've had the drive market, which was Long Island, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, obviously New York City.
And I do want to add, Lynn, that the focus moving forward this year is to identify five key markets and then the top influencers from those markets and see how we can capture their attention and capture their interest in coming here. So that is a huge focus for next year.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Do you have other questions?
I have a small question. Yeah. So you talked a little bit about developing an online web page or something like that. You did talk about creating a web page or a travel guide online or something like that. And then when Legislator Archer actually said, no, we're not going to do that. So are we not going to have a travel guide at all in 2021?
So the proposal is to not have a printed travel guide. Now that, that's right now the proposal is to not have a printed travel guide. Working in some way to do something that would be effective is what we're looking at.
And, you know, we are, you know, we're looking at all different options, but right now the proposal is to not have a printed travel guide.
So are we going to have any travel guide? That was my question. Not, you know, are we going to have no online travel guide, no hard copy travel guide?
We are looking at how we can develop an online travel guide. And I will say this much, the person who actually designed this year's travel guide and did all the ad sales for the department, he and I have a meeting set up for next week because he says he creates them online. And so that was, you know, that was a revenue sharing agreement
right there.
So I don't, you know, I'm sorry, I'm hedging my bets, but I don't want to get out in front of me. I have not had a full conversation with him yet. Right. I don't know what he can do.
Right. So my concern would be that if we don't have anything budgeted for a travel guide, basically, you know, and that's a concern, in my opinion, for a county that has consistently had a hard copy travel guide for forever and ever, right? And now we're not going to have any travel guide. That's a little concerning. Something to think about. I know that we went back and forth with COVID. I know that whether we should have one or not, and apparently we shouldn't have if we have so many sitting in boxes still, right?
Well, the only reason you have them in boxes, I need to, you know, Rick has been wonderful. Like, he's been good about talking to me about a lot of things. So the only reason you have them sitting in boxes, is my understanding, is because they printed late this year.
Right.
That's the only reason why. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So I'm still not clear whether we're going to have a travel guide for 2021. So I'm going to ask that, you know, before you make any go further with that going forward, that you come back to the committee and you know, we'll discuss that in detail, because I know that that's something that the committee is typically very interested in. And I think it has great value. And whether it's online or printed is another issue. But I think that we should, you know, go further with that. Any other questions on this tourism budget for this year? I'm scrolling through to look. Okay, Trey, let's see. Tom, go ahead.
Just a quick question. What would be the estimated cost of the printed travel guide? What has it been normally?
So there's usually $100,000 budgeted to it, but there's a but there. There are ad sales involved in the travel guide, so it returns revenue of anywhere between $20,000 to $11,000.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And if I can add the print part of it, if you're referring to that being part of the question, that goes into part of the matching funds. That's something that qualifies for the matching funds, so we see half of that come back through I Love New York matching funds.
Right. That's why I think this year it happened late, but it made no sense not to do it because of the matching funds, and it was a minimal cost moving forward.
Right, right. And they are moving out of the house since we are the drive market.
Hi, Lynn.
Okay, so we have Legislator Bartels and then Legislator Archer again.
Thanks. I just have two questions. On the issue of the travel guide, do we own the digital content for the 2020 travel guide? I mean, or is that time limited? Do we have some kind of contractual arrangement that digitally we have to take it down after 2020?
So that I know of, Tracy, there is no digital version of the travel guide on our website currently. I'm going to go back 100 million years when I was in tourism before and say, when we used to do the design contract for this, it was always work for hire, so that you got those master files and you had them forever.
Are you sure about, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I remember when we had this conversation and I recall looking online and seeing it online and feeling better about the fact that it was actually online. So
our current, if I can, our current travel guide, our current printed guide, there is a version of it on our website. Right. It doesn't have a big click-through rate, about 1,000 a year click to it, as opposed to hundreds of thousands that click to our regular website. So what we're finding is people go to our website, but they don't necessarily click on the guide. But you are correct in that our printed guide does appear with a button
on our website.
And, right. and if we don't know the answer today, maybe we could just come back is,
yep,
if we're not printing a guide next year to answer Legislator Cahill's question, if we have, at least if we have that digital guide from 2020, you know, we could potentially make some modifications, but at least there's something that's up online currently that would take us through at least a portion of the year, if we're allowed to. I don't know what the contractual agreement allows.
We've never not printed a guide, so I don't know what the time limit. That's a good question. I don't think there is a time limit because I think it's ours. We own it, but okay, we've never been in this position before, so it's a good point because we could leave it up and continue to track what the click-through rate is once there isn't a print guide.
Okay, thank you. And then the other question is just, can I get a copy of BLO's proposal?
Their RFP?
Yeah, their response to the RFP.
Mm-hmm.
That would be great. Thank you.
I have it in my office.
Okay.
If I could add something, Chairman Cahill. This is Evelyn.
I know it's hard to see everybody. Sure.
I just want to say part of the reason that the plans for the online guide are unclear is that we haven't embarked on the website redesign with BLO yet. You know, we have much of the same content in the travel guide is in the listings on our website. So there's a considerable duplication there. And I think the first open question is, how can we better utilize both the data that we have about our tourism businesses as well as the listings that we have on the website? Where does that get us when we do that redesign? And then what's the missing pieces that we need to add back in? So we've talked about the printed maps and different kinds of supplements to it. I think, you know, we want to get through that redesign process and then see what do we think is missing? Is it something that looks like a guide online? Or is it an enhanced version, an easier to use version of the kind of listings we already have? Mm-hmm. So that's the main source of uncertainty where we need to do a little bit more work first to see what we really need.
Okay, so like I said, Legislator Archer, I got you next, but I think that we're gonna revisit the whole travel mm-hmm. guide thing, I think, and see if maybe we can discuss that in a little bit more detail, come up with, you know, some sort of solution there after you've talked to BLO and, you know, cause my concern would be that, you know, Green, Columbia, Dutchess, Orange, Sullivan, you know, Poconos, you know, have travel guides and we don't. So, all right. So Legislator Archer, go ahead.
So, thank you. State aid, is that I Love New York funding in the budget? Okay. So, will that funding, because you said it really applies to, does it apply to just the printed, or will they help with the development of the website? Will they help with, if we decide to do an online version, I mean, will that all still be recognized by I Love New York as some kind of matching, or does it have to be printed material?
So matching funds has this long set of rules and regulations about how you can qualify to get that money back, depending on what media you're using, right? So to answer your question in the easiest way to get that money back is by doing a travel guide. The rules are clear. You're not held up. It's easiest both to comply and to get approval. When you move towards using it in a digital format, there are a lot more hoops to jump through. It's not that it's not attainable, and no matter what, Lynn, we will always make sure that we apply and voucher and do things appropriately so that we can use this program. It is so valuable.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It just is not as easy.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Lisa. I was on mute that whole time. I apologize. Okay. Thank you very much, Lisa. I appreciate that. There's no more questions. We'll move on to Alan Macaluso for Information Services. Hi, Alan. How are you?
I'm doing well. Can everyone hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let me share my screen and see if you can you can see this. So let me find it. Can you see my screen?
Yes, we can, sir.
Okay, so okay, so just quickly do our agenda. We'll just go through the quick overview of the mission statement, go over our organizational structure as it will be in 2021, a summary of what our COVID-19 response and the financial impact from that, our 2021 goals and objectives, and our department budget and some other performance metrics for this previous year. So again, just a summary. So information services, you know, we really strive to provide really technology leadership and governance to facilitate our citizen access to government information and services. I mean, so really, when I first got here, we really needed to refine the mission to kind of align it with what we think is the best practices industry-wide, and to kind of elevate the team with a mission that allows us to whenever there's a doubt of what our team, whatever there's a doubt of how they should operate, the mission statement should really guide us in how we are to execute for our constituents, which is our department, our various departments, and some public constituents when we need to reach out for instance, RPS, et cetera. So this is really our guiding principle. And I think the four main components of it that I'd like to highlight is really a return to sort of customer service, where we are really a customer service organization by at the heart of it. Our collaboration skills, like really not just collaboration from like our collaboration software, et cetera, but actually where we try to collaborate amongst our team, amongst various folks within the team, but also collaborate across different departments and different expertise where we can. Again, communication, make sure that we're always clear what we're communicating to our constituents as well as to each other, and our commitment to both ourselves and our end users. Let me move on. So this will be our organizational structure. This is our organizational structure. The items in red are defunded roles that will be defunded. Either some of them are defunded now, some will be defunded. There's dates attached to them when those folks retire. So we are looking at a total of 9 defunded positions in 2021, and 1 part-time computer analyst.
So Mr. Macaluso, before you move off of that chart there, that looks like a substantial cut in personnel from where I sit here.
Of those positions were, like, again, positions that were either reclassified and defunct or that we never had a chance to backfill due to COVID-19 and were defunded. Some were retirements but you're right. There is a substantial hit to the team, and we're trying to realign our resources internally to make sure that we can continue to deliver.
So do you think that that will have any kind of impact on your deliverables?
My hope is that one of the things we're looking to do to help mitigate that loss is to look at some of our internal procedures, like, for instance, procurement and automation with sort of ticketing, alignment of resources with customer service, where we can field tickets not just from our staff but up to the management staff as well, where we're trying to reorganize how we front load the ticket response so that we can streamline some of that the incoming requests that come in. Our purchasing, we've streamlined over the last couple of years to make it almost exclusively digital. We have gotten some assistance from purchasing as well, so that has helped streamline the purchasing component of this. We have hired some excellent staff that have been helped identify some of some efficiencies or greater efficiencies, some gaps. And again, this comes back down to our collaboration and within the team to help identify some of these the hurdles and to help streamline the procedures. So the short of it is that, you know, we're looking to kind of try to close a lot, many of those gaps as possible. You know, I think there will be some challenges as we move forward. We're losing some key deep subject matter expertise in, for instance, our VoIP system. Izzy is going to be retiring, but we're backfilling that with someone who is ramping up quickly. And we hope to also leverage some of our consultants in the VoIP, Newcastle, for example, to help kind of shepherd him into a more self-sustaining role. We have our RPS application analyst who's also retired, but we're actually hiring for that role as we speak. So we should have backfill for that come the end of the year and have that person up to speed by the time that that position retires. So I hope that answers your question. I think that we do think that we will experience challenges. I will not deny it, but again, part of our objective is again to look at our standard operating procedures and try to streamline them, refine them, automate where we can, mm-hmm. and leverage some other external resources like again from purchasing and others who might be able to help help guide us and streamline it even further.
Thank you very much.
Okay, next slide. It's a summary. So COVID-19, you know, one of the first things we had to do was to get the test site stood up. So with the assistance of Kingston Equitable Internet Initiative, they have a mobile wireless service. We partnered with them, and they were able to provide high-speed internet access to the test site over radio frequencies. And we got that site stood up in 3 days for a walkthrough and then 5 days to go live. Subsequent to that, also right around the same time, probably at the same time, we deployed a parallel emergency operations center. We stood up a parallel EOC in the health department plus a 12-station call center at the department of health so that the health professionals and the EOC could really be in proximity to each other for operational continuity. And we did that over the weekend, which, you know, took, pulling out VoIP phones and switches and getting plumbed up and finding desktops and laptops and other tooling to kind of get that stood up, and also with the help of buildings and grounds, we were able to stand up the EOC and the 12-station call center within a weekend. We also use some of the ArcGIS, which is the GIS tooling, and some of their data management solutions, and we were able to build the dynamic COVID-19 data aggregation and processing system that you see in the dashboard that you see on the COVID-19 website. And there's also a much more feature-rich ArcGIS dashboard as well that allows you to kind of slice and dice the data. And we did that as well as we moved through the first couple of weeks and months of COVID-19. We had to quickly repurpose a lot of existing stock that had been on tap for departmental refreshes, as well as purchasing additional laptops and Chromebooks and mobile devices to help enable some of the remote workforces and get folks working remotely. Given the remote capabilities and the challenges that presented, we also had to evaluate and onboard a number of different collaboration and conferencing solutions, again, to help facilitate the remote workforce, to help really kind of jumpstart and really crash course into remote collaboration technologies. We also worked with the Recovery Service Center and sourced and onboarded a cloud-based 311 citizen request management system, which is QSEND. Their product is called QAlert. Again, that is used for the Recovery Service Center as the front entry point for capturing metrics around the COVID-19 response. given the sheer numbers of folks who are working remotely and the capabilities that that the AV collaboration tools and the conferencing tools required, we increased our bandwidth to 1 gigabyte to help support that surge in the network usage. And then we also scaled and operationalized our virtual private network and remote desktop capabilities, again, so that folks could access county systems. Any questions on that before we move on? Okay. And these are some of the costs. So in the response, we had to really look at our budget, look at some of the existing equipment that we had, some of the communication, and we had to onboard. Again, as I said, we onboarded some services that we didn't have prior. Zoom, for instance, would be one of them. Some Microsoft Teams capabilities, which would be one of that. Testing supplies, which we needed to buy some equipment for the mobile testing site in Tech City. We had to purchase additional VoIP phones for various capabilities, including the call center, and some professional services initially in the COVID-19 response, which was we had to pivot a few times in the call center capabilities. And one of the professional services item was some ticketing and tracking capabilities that was a vendor that came and did that work. Any questions on this?
And just give me 1 second to scroll through and make sure no one has their hand raised. There, Legislator Archer, go ahead.
Thank you. Are the computers in this number on total COVID costs? Didn't you have a whole set a computer equipment that was earmarked as COVID?
Yes. So this.
But that's not in here, correct?
That's IT equipment. That's the second line.
All right, because I'm showing for computer equipment that's COVID, that's been marked as COVID on the special COVID line in your budget at $324,588. Am I misreading something? And this is. I'm sorry. Let me step back. It a total for, and the budget was amended $545,617. For COVID-related computer equipment.
That seems extremely high.
Well, maybe I'll need to check that. Because I'm getting the 18. I've got, you had about 18 in supplies and change, right? No, you have 7. All right. So could I get a copy of this page just so I can verify?
Absolutely.
Ellen, that would be great. I guess I didn't see it. Was it in our OneDrive?
I did not. I sent it to Fawn later this afternoon.
Okay. So your numbers are not jiving with what I have. So maybe we have an error. So we can maybe reconcile that.
Okay, yeah, I did go over these numbers a couple of times today to make sure that they were right. So yeah, I would be more than happy.
It could be on my end. So I just wanted to check. Thank you.
And Fawn, if you wouldn't mind, any attachments that you received for tonight's meeting, could you please put them out on the OneDrive for so everyone has a chance to look at them? Thanks.
Great. Thank you.
Shall I move on?
I apologize. I just didn't have a chance. I got these during your last meeting monitoring that, but I'll
that's no problem whatsoever. I don't see anyone else with any questions. Alan, please go ahead.
Okay. So our 2021 goals and objectives. So we have two capital projects in the works. One is an end of life network switch upgrade. There's a number of network switches throughout the county that are end of life throughout the coming year. That capital project we'll begin executing on it in the beginning of the year, and some PC replacements for a number of Windows 7 machines. We had been kicking the can down the road for some time with just some extended support for those Windows 7 machines, but given the risk that Windows 7 presents and to kind of get in front of that as quickly as we can. You know, Bert recommended a capital project for that. So that's what that is. We also will continue to, we have a grant fund. We got $113,000 in grant funding from Department of Homeland Security and the New York State Board of Elections for cybersecurity enhancements. So there's a variety of both services and product and technology that's going to be deployed. So we'll continue with those enhancements in 2021. That project kicked off in 2019. So we've done some remediation on the BOE infrastructure that's going to continue on through the end of 2020 and into 2021 as we kick off some of the projects that are funded by that grant. We'll continue to expand our cybersecurity awareness training. We see breach attempts regularly. Fortunately, we have a number of products in place and services that help mitigate that. But I think the biggest risk point is end users. So we want to make sure that we keep people informed and aware, and we'll continue to expand on that in 2021. One thing that we're going to do, which has been on our list for some time, but I think with COVID and with the elections and the risk that was pretty publicly apparent with various ransomware attacks and breaches, et cetera, we've bumped up to the top of our list our two-factor authentication for a number of different critical systems. So that'll require not just a password for these environments. It'll require not just a password, but a randomly generated code that, again, the point of that is to help prevent sort of unattended access by bots and other types of nefarious techniques. We're looking to expand our cloud-based disaster recovery solution for the Neural Financial System. We prototyped it this year, and it went pretty well. And we plan to extend that in 2021. And also, given the publicity of a number of ransomware attacks, we will be looking at some of our key data to move it to offline storage so that in case, you know, heaven forbid, we get a ransomware attack, we can restore our data back to a clean version. And one of the techniques for that is to get clean copies in an offline, what they call air gap storage, off into the cloud. So that's one thing that we'll be looking at in 2021 as well. And, you know, as we know, we don't know when COVID-19 will end. But I think we've learned a lot in the last 6 or 8 months, and we'll continue to expand and streamline our remote workforce technologies and collaboration technologies. We're working to redevelop the county intranet plus a number of departmental websites with some improved and expanded capabilities. We're looking to explore, based on what happened with the COVID-19 radio-based internet technology, we're looking to explore some wireless internet options to service county locations and assist the planning department in their Ulster County broadband initiative. And we continue to identify and convert legacy applications into more contemporary web-based solutions. As you know, our print usage has gone down dramatically, and also how we use our printers and our multifunction devices has also changed. So we're looking to continue to explore streamlined print management and some digital signature capabilities. I know we're doing some more digital signature, but I think there's some more formalized ways of handling contracts, et cetera, with a DigiSign, for example. And we will continue to explore municipal outreach by shared services where we can. Any questions on that?
No, I don't see any. Go ahead. Thank you.
Okay. So here's our 2020 overview. So I tried to kind of give you a perspective on what our 2020 budget looked like, what our 2021 budget will look like, and the deltas between, so you know where we're making, where the impact was. So our biggest impact is in our personnel and personnel related expenses. So with the number of retirements and that are both that have happened this year and that will continue to in 2021, we're looking at, you know, roughly $614,000 in personnel related expense reductions. Mm. This is our biggest hits on our budget.
I work at IBM, and that's a busy chart.
So I tried to clean it up.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. There's a lot of stuff there. I hear you. Yeah. I mean, I just gotta, you know, say that I wouldn't be honest if I didn't say I'm concerned about the staff reductions in IS, and I just hope you really, you know, there's a plan in place to ensure that, you know, we're not going to miss anything because of that, you know.
No, I agree. I would be remiss to say I wasn't concerned, but again, we have some of our newer staff are really quite skilled. And we've done some cross training with them, and we are hiring a new person for our real property system, who's also brings a lot of contemporary skills. I think one of the objectives that we would like to see this person do would be to not just take over the real property system, but again, look at ways that we can create greater efficiencies in that process, freeing that person up their time for swivel desking to some other capabilities within the department. So, I share, I'm not maybe as concerned as you, but I do share some concern that our staff reductions are going to give us some pain points.
So does the, I'm just trying to refresh. It's been a long time since I asked these kind of questions of the county. Do you folks, utilize any professional contract personnel to do specific tasks, certain program skills or something like that?
So yes. Yeah, so, we have one, a contractor who uses is an old employee, Pat Murray, and she comes in and helps with the real property system, but she is retired, and I think her goal is to stay retired. So we can't rely on her, which is one reason why we're looking to hire a person that will take on that role. We do have some contractors for like our networking support, some of our server and virtualization support, or security support from this now called CB20, but used to be called CPI. So we use them to help with a lot of our projects, switch maintenance, switch management, firewall rules, server builds. They help with our, again, the strategy to do some cloud-based backup and cloud-based disaster recovery. We're using CB20 on that as well. And again, a lot of what we do is you make sure that those efforts are documented and captured and cross-trained for our team so that we don't lose that expertise.
Gotcha.
So we do have some professional services contract arrangements that we have maintained and will continue to maintain. I think before COVID-19, we were looking to cut some of that back, but I think as COVID-19 hit and as the result of some of these workforce reductions, we're going to maintain their levels.
Great. Legislator Archer.
Thank you. Alan, it looks like you're doing a lot of cross training, retraining, and leveraging the resources that you do have. So I applaud that. We just came out of a budget meeting, and I just want to put this out there. We have, if I'm correct, the maintenance line, which is 4690, ends up being all the contracts for all the systems that we utilize. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So that's a pretty significant hit. I let me just ask the question. With the team you're building and the skill set, are there any opportunities to bring some of the work in-house in a way, in an effort to shave some ongoing maintenance costs? Because that keeps going up and it doesn't change. And have you thought about, or is there an opportunity to bring some of that work in-house with some of the folks that you've brought on board?
The short answer is, it's not a short answer. Some of those maintenance costs are pretty vendor specific, meaning for things like, say, the New World Public Safety System, they're very specific. and the maintenance activities that go on, it's pretty specialized.
And it's contractually, you have to go through the vendor to get the modifications, correct?
Correct.
When you're looking at, I'm sorry, so when you look at new systems, do you look at it with that thought in mind, that is there an ability? I mean, because it seems like when we look at these contracts every year and the renewals, they're pretty significant and they never go down. They always go up. And so is there a methodology or consideration in looking at different applications that would allow you to, you know, do the work in-house, or are we just tied to one person knowing it? But you do a lot of back training, so cross training. So I'm just curious.
So, I mean, I think some of the enterprise applications are hard to tease out the maintenance piece of that. But for instance, we're working hard to sunset some of our legacy AS/400 applications, and there's a lot of maintenance costs that we just keep kicking that down the road. The sooner we can get some of those products off those AS/400s, which have their own maintenance costs, and the software that's associated with it have their maintenance costs, those will go away. For instance, one thing that we're looking at is, I mean, first of all, there's a lot of cloud-based solutions for some of these products, not the enterprise application products, but for some products that we're looking to take advantage of, which would, again, the maintenance then gets wrapped into a subscription, for example. And then we just have we can maintain the infrastructure. Structure. There's no maintenance of hardware, no maintenance of software. That's part of the subscription cost. So there are opportunities like that that we're looking. We continue to look at.
So what would it take to be able to execute some of those opportunities? And what would the cost savings be if we did some of those things? I mean, you sound like you're reviewing them, but it doesn't sound like they're embedded in your budget for next year. Is that correct?
Say that again.
So some of the things that you're thinking about that you think will allow you to do more in-house and streamline and say and realize some savings is some things you're kicking around, but they're not really in your budget at this point, correct?
Correct.
So is there any one thing that you feel like if you put a little bit towards it, you could realize a great return and we should be thinking about, or no?
I mean, I think we should be thinking about all opportunities like that. I think part of it is to understand, if I understand the question, some of it has to understand what is the application being used. In some cases, some applications are being used by one person, but it's on this legacy system that we've been kicking it down the road for a while. It becomes beholden on us to really figure out how to get that product into another form so that that one or two people can use the product. Some of these products are so embedded in the operation of a department that it's hard to tease out. If that makes
sense. Alan, the tax system is one of these, correct?
Correct, yep. So, you know, there's a tax system that I think it's TRUT, and it's an AS/400 application, and I know that Bert's is looking to replace that, but that, besides the software that's on it, it's the hardware maintenance costs around the hardware plus the vendor that has been engaged to support the product, because IBM doesn't support it any longer. So these legacy costs that come with it that we're looking to expedite the migration to something more sustainable.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? You'll see some of it. You might see some of this in the next slide.
Yep. I don't think there's any more questions. Go ahead.
Operating expenses. Again, I tried to show it 2020 versus 2021 and the deltas between them. In some cases, we've cut our professional services and education training. There's a lot of free stuff out there that we're trying to take advantage of, and some cross-training that wherever we can. We have some professional services that we're no longer using, like for the support of the pool, for example, Wi-Fi. Let me get my spreadsheet. And sorry, I closed my spreadsheet. But our rentals and leases, that's for our printers, office supplies, conferences. We won't be taking any conferences or travel expenses. Those are being cut to zero. Our communication expenses. One thing that we've done is we try to claw back some cell phone uses. We have some new plans for our cell phones, and we've decommissioned some services that were no longer needed. So that is a savings there, and some maintenance costs. And we've scaled back dramatically our computer equipment replacements from our budget, hence the capital project. So that's coming out of our budget and some software related expenses as well.
Anyone have any questions as I scroll through? Doesn't look like it. Thank you.
Okay. And just some, quickly we could go through. So, from year to date back in early October, so we took in about 2,471 tickets and have closed 2,382. Again, the top incidents by department, social services, and emergency communications are by far the top two. Incidents are break-fix. So if someone's reporting an issue with a product or service, that's what break-fix is. That's what an incident is. A printer's not working, et cetera. Password is expired, for example. Equipment requests, software requests for new product, new services, a new printer, those types of things. Those are requests. So you can see it's a little misleading, but we get a lot of the requests to come in. But finance and social services were the top for 2020. Again, we got 3,600 and change of requests last year, pretty sizable. And again, just sort of quick breakdown of where we see a lot of our efforts going to, supporting the printers, our VoIP phones, desktop computers, enterprise apps, et cetera.
Alan, real quick question. So that's fine. That's perfect there. Is it possible that we could look at something like using a Slack or something like that, or some sort of messaging system that has an integrated phone to get rid of the desk phones? I mean, something like that. Is that considered?
I mean, in fact, we are doing that now. It's one of the communication expenses that we have. We actually onboarded recently was Microsoft Teams has a component where you can get a local phone attached to your Microsoft Office 365 account. It has to be assigned, but it's in theory. You can make voice calls through your Teams account. It's got you could also call the number directly. There are other services where you can just use your cell phone if you have a county issued cell phone that becomes sort of like your quote desk phone. So there are options that we're exploring to kind of move off the or at least investigate how to move off the VoIP system. And the VoIP system is pretty legacy and antiquated and costly, so we are looking at ways of streamlining that. I mean, if you look at the recovery service center, I don't recall how many call takers there are, but they're all virtual. So that's kind of the model in many cases we could see ourselves going to. But again, there's a lot of legacy hardware and procedures that we have to tease out and move towards. There's a lot of options with like RingCentral, as gives you an example, and some other cloud-based vendors that can provide CloudWise VoIP systems. Again, it's something that we need to step through carefully so that it's not disruptive. But we are exploring some options that are built into, you mentioned Slack, but Microsoft Teams has a similar kind of, they're a competitor to Slack. And it does have some voice options, which we've already begun exploring this year. We continue to roll that out in 2021 as we see departments with needs and conferencing needs and et cetera.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else have any questions? I'm going to scroll through, see if I see any. Nope, I don't see any. Alan, thank you very much. It was a very thorough presentation. I appreciate it. And if anybody on the committee has any questions, feel free to contact Alan. And again, we'll have this on the OneDrive to look at that presentation, correct? Right. Okay, so we're now going to go to employment and training, and Thomasine Oliphant will be giving her presentation. Hello, Ms. Oliphant. Thank you very much. Saying thank you for being patient. It's a pretty late meeting for us here.
It's okay. Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it. So I'd just like to, which I apologize that I didn't have on my slides, but before we go to the next slide, Juan, I'd just like to share my departmental overview. I have it written, and I can throw that in as a slide. So the Ulster County Office of Employment and Training is co-located with the New York State Department of Labor to operate the Ulster County Career Center under the Federal Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, the OLA. The Ulster County Workforce Development Board is a system operator for the Ulster County Career Center. The mission and vision of the Ulster County Career Center is to ensure that every Ulster County business has access to a skilled labor force and that every Ulster County resident has access to job training opportunities that lead to high quality employment or career advancement. And under County Executive Pat Ryan's economic initiative to recover, reopen, and realign Ulster County's economy, OET has been assigned to take lead in the effort to support job seekers and businesses looking to rebuild their workforce. So I just wanted to start with that, especially as you can just understand how we had to shift through the pandemic. So as I said, the Ulster County Career Center is co-located with Department of Labor. And when the pandemic hit, the local New York State Department of Labor staff, they all were assigned to work remotely on the UI issue. So the OET team here, we were alone with, managing the Career Center space. And we still had an influx of unemployment unemployment insurance concerns. So my team had fielded over 500 calls ensuring that they got to a New York State Department of Labor staff. So that was one way we had supported the county. We also supported the county with partnering with the Recovery Service Center to make sure that there was continued updates on how to apply for unemployment, the pandemic assistance, just any updates that we received from Department of Labor. I made sure the Recovery Service Center had that information to share with the public. And we had to redesign our service delivery. So we turned to only services by appointment because since the Department of Labor was not here, we had to basically close down that side of the Career Center. But we still served individuals by coming within by appointment. So we put our intake forms online. We put all safety protocols in place with plexiglass, made sure we were set up for the reopening. And we also provided, we developed partnerships to provide virtual job readiness opportunities. So I'll just go through our services. So virtual in-person appointment services, we still provided resume guidance, interviewing skills, virtual workshops that we posted on our website, and training opportunities. We still continue to support our customers who wanted to get into training by connecting them with opportunities. So one opportunity we were able to partner with, especially since a lot of our training providers had closed down, since a lot of the training providers provided in-person training, we needed to find training that could be remote. So Coursera is an online, you can go back to the slide. Coursera is an online learning platform. They were providing Coursera for workforce recovery, a partnership with local governments. So I was able to get this partnership. And so we have outreach to over 12,000 individuals on unemployment through our one-stop operating system. So we were able to access those individuals on unemployment and get them out this information. We also shared other training opportunities, but we really wanted to be able to provide this online learning opportunity because, you know, especially with transportation or childcare barriers, they were able to use this to be able to upskill, reskill. So there's a whole bunch of different courses, whether it's tech, business skills. It was specifically designed by people in workforce development and in partnership with the Coursera team to offer this opportunity. So it just had ended the free enrollment period. So we have currently 434 actively taking classes, and they have until December to complete those courses. So I have one of my staff members actively reaching out to those individuals to make sure that, you know, we see success from this, that, you know, people were able to upskill to get new jobs, or they were able to get these training to, you know, and, you know, get jobs from those training courses as well. Since we had so many free licenses, I did offer this to Ulster County personnel as well. So we have a total of 46 Ulster County's employees to be able to upskill because, you know, in this day and age, you know, we may need to, you know, have different skills, and this is a free opportunity for our own employees to be able to have like better, you know, Excel skills or whatever digital literacy skills that they may need to help function in their jobs currently here at the county.
So real quick question. Do the county employees get the full catalog of Coursera, or are you limited to just to job training? Because I know I've used this for years, and it's really unbelievable, some of the stuff that's out there.
Yes, it's the full catalog. So I don't know. I know it's very small, but there's 4,734 courses. And I know Google even has an IT certificate in there as well. So especially, you know, so it's really great courses. John Hopkins, even the COVID tracing is on there, and a lot of individuals have taken that. So I know that we've used that, and that was prior to. So our COVID-19 team, you know, they have used Coursera to get that training. That was paid by the state.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You can go to the next slide. And so I want to share about what training opportunities that we provide through our WIOA funding. So you can go ahead and click again. So we have occupational skills training, on the job training, and paid internships. So our occupational skills training, we do an individual training account where we pay for if individuals want to go to like CNA training at Ulster BOCES or any other training through SUNY Ulster. We are hoping to expand and build our training providers. We just made a great partnership with Albany Can Code to launch Kingston Can Code, especially through this pandemic. We saw a need that people need digital literacy skills. How can we help them? How can we go remote if they don't even know, you know, some of their customers don't even know how to have the skills to use a computer? So we saw that need. So I partnered with them to offer a digital literacy course where they were able to provide individuals who were lacking those skills to get savvy and comfortable using the computer. You can go to the next slide. And so for our WIOA training services data so far in 2020, we've trained 42 adults, dislocated workers, and youth, including three on-the-job training contracts. And our on-the-job training contract, that is an opportunity where there's an employer who may have a job opening. And so we're able to match them with an individual that they can train on the job. So they would pay a wage like $15 an hour. And after that 3 month, that 6 month opportunity, partnership, that contract, they would be officially hired. And we would be able to pay from our WIOA funding 75% reimbursement to that employer. So it's a win-win. We're able to help an individual get on the job training plus actual job leading to employment, and the business wins because they're able to get 75% reimbursement. With our occupational skills training, just to give you guys, you know, some overview of courses, Class A and Class B commercial driving courses, LPN, CNA, oil, heat, air conditioning, phlebotomy, a lot, you know, the courses at the Green Careers Academy, surgical tech, the digital literacy, front-end web development, JavaScript, welding, manufacturing. And our training providers include Ulster BOCES, Commercial Driving Training School, SUNY Ulster, and Albany Kingston King Code. And the OJTs include pest control, manufacturing, electrician, and office manager. So I wanted to showcase, you know, just that the new training that that was launched for the fall, that we put a few students in, front-end web development. It's going very well. We're getting great feedback from the individuals, and that's totally remote. So it's a great opportunity, especially with the tech sector right now being so prominent, and you know that even that you can work remotely anywhere. So we hope to continue to partner with on this Kingston King Code initiative and continue to help individuals get into tech, especially women and individuals of color who may not have the opportunity otherwise. So they have been a great partner, and we're so glad for this opportunity. Also veterans. So we also marketed this to veterans, and there's also additional assistance for veterans. So we're really excited about this opportunity to continue to partner with them into 2021. Next slide. So our Young Adult Employment Program is a great program that we have, ages 16 to 24. So these are any youth that are out of school. They could have their high school equivalency diploma, or we can help them get that. So we pay their same thing, occupational skills training. Through this program, we can do paid internships where we can pay them up to $15 an hour, as long as we have a worksite supervisor willing to provide. That could be 3 months or longer. And sometimes it leads to a job, or sometimes it just gains experience. But this is also another great opportunity. We just made partnerships with SUNY Ulster's tax program and Ulster BOCES, trying to make those pathways from those taking the HSC courses to flow into our Young Adult Employment Program. I also met with the administrators at Kingston High School that if anybody's at risk of dropping out, we have a referral process that we can capture those students as well. And I also just connected with Youth Build that we can co-enroll our students into our Young Adult Employment Program. And you can go to the next slide.
Real quickly, okay. back on that subject. So is there an age limit where you cap off the folks you will consider young adults, or is that a little bit flexible at the top end?
It's not because of the WIOA law. So it's 16 to 24.
16 to 24. Okay, well, that's still a pretty good chunk. And then My next question is, have you spoken with the sheriff and the district attorney about maybe somehow syncing up with them in their restorative justice, I'll call it crusade, because that's what it is.
Yeah. I know we work with the Brighter Futures Initiative too. We're working with them, but I haven't really spoken to them, so I can reconnect. I can connect with them on that.
I just think that's you know, it's like a positive step in what they're trying to do, and it might be a good connection. You know, something that you guys to work together. Thank you.
Yes, definitely. That sounds great. And with our new Green Careers Initiative, this is especially what we mentioned for the 2021 budget. We're starting it now. We have set aside 8 spots in our Young Adult Employment Program for green careers. So especially with the Green New Deal and with helping to build up green careers, the Green Careers Initiative, we want to help more young people enter into the building trades and have this opportunity. So we have collaborated. We just had a meeting with Youth Build. They're wonderful. We're going to be co-enrolling, especially with this Green Careers Initiative, and working together. We have some great contractors that we worked with Citizens for Local Power and with them, and we've had a lot of their adults, actually, their adult cohort go into the OJT program and or go into the Green Careers Academy. So what my goal is to continue what I've been doing is really making these community partnerships in order to make these pathways into our programs. But this Green Careers Internship is just another part of connecting to our Green Careers Academy as well, getting young people interested and involved. You can go to the next one. And then we had our Summer Youth Employment Program, which we weren't sure we were going to have this year. So thank you, Legislator Brian Cahill, for your support and advocating for the Summer Youth Funds. So this funding is from the Temporary Assistance to Needy Families, which is administered by the New York State Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance. And this serves ages 14 through 20, and it's a summer program. So kids from high school can be in this program. It's just a summer program that we use our TANF funding for. And the TANF funding pays for the wages paid out to the youth, as well as 3 part-time summer staff. So I just also want to say I have eight full-time staff under me, my deputy director, and then 7 other full-time staff. And then for the summer months of this program, I have 3 part-time summer youth counselors. You can go to the next slide. So just wanted to brighten up the day a little bit and give you guys some pictures to show you how we had to, you can go back really quick. We had to be creative because, you know, we wanted to make sure the kids were safe. We wanted to make sure that we were going to put them in work sites that, you know, that were going to be safe. We did a lot of outdoors. We made sure every youth had PPE. We worked with the businesses to make sure that they had PPE, you know, they had what they needed to be safe. We had no COVID breakouts. It was very successful. And the kids really had a great time. And in order to outreach during this pandemic, we did a drive-through application drive-off at the Career Center. So my staff, they had gloves and masks. People would come in. We would make copies. They would just come to the lobby area, and we just did the drive-through, and we got our applications. So we had to be very creative in doing that as well to make sure that this opportunity was going to be available for these youth, especially during this pandemic when they, you know, need a wage. So I can talk about the numbers on the next slide. So just to give you a year-to-year comparison from 2019 to 2020. So in 2019, we placed 148. This year, we were still able to place 116, which was still good, you know, in regards to the pandemic. We had a total of 31 work sites. You know, we did have 61 in 2019. So that was a little bit of a challenge, but we still made it work. Total hours worked, 12,457. We were able to increase the wage this year by $1, so it was $13 an hour. In-school youth was 91. Out-of-school youth was 25, which is great. And the number of youth that was able to get employment or an extension was 17, which is, you know, compared to 2019, wasn't bad. So, you know, I think what made it very successful that I also want to share in the Summer Youth Employment Program, we had 3 different creative partnerships. So we partnered with Kingston Can Code again with providing a front-end web development summer program. So that was really successful. The kids were able to learn how to build their own websites. We had a partnership with Ellenville High School and Go Beyond Greatness to provide a hybrid job readiness and worksite experience. They were able to work with the radio station tech at the school, and that went very successful. So we're especially glad to offer something in Ellenville where those kids are very, you know, separated from most sites that are in here in Kingston. And we also worked with Kingston High School Brothers at Bard mentees with the Brothers at Bard mentors at Ramapo site. And this was great because the kids were able to get a college course credit. They were able to be provided with additional mentorship for their from the Brothers of Bard mentors, so they gained life skills training, and they had the hands-on experience. And it all went very, very well. So we're very, very pleased with how we were able to operate the Summer Youth Employment Program. The board was very, the Workforce Development Board was very pleased with our results. And so just really grateful that we were able to put on this program. It was a 5-week, so we had to shorten it from the 6-week. And we're able to give those who were in the Albany Kingston Can Code cohort, we offered them stipends. Instead, the other kids got wages. They got, you know, the $13 an hour. And with those kids in that program, that we just gave a stipend every 2 weeks, which was fine for the kids. Does anybody have any questions about that? No? Okay. And then, oh, go ahead, Lynn.
No questions. But I mean, from all of the things that you're presenting, I mean, I think you've really expanded the programs in this offering here, and it's really quite impressive.
Yes, thank you so much.
I just wanted to give you some feedback. It's really amazing, and particularly in the midst of a pandemic. So
thank you
made
so
the
much.
Best of a bad situation.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. I don't see any other hands, so I'm going to let you keep going. And all right, thanks. I have to scroll through on the side, so it takes me a second. Thanks.
Oh, okay. It's okay. And our last service, which is near and dear to my heart, is our Ticket to Work program. I think, Vaughn, you could hit the button again so you guys can see that. So our Disability Resource Services. Troy Snyder, he is a wonderful, wonderful. I've worked with him. I worked, you know, previously in the field. And Troy has been an amazing advocate and truly incredible coordinator by providing services to those who have disabilities, helping them to support from transitioning from SSI and SSD to independence. And he has been still able to serve individuals through this pandemic by phone and by email, and still getting connected, even advocated for someone who wasn't getting their unemployment that really needed it. So these services are very, very important in our community. We have many individuals in our community in Ulster County who need this, who are on SSA and SSD. And this program, Ticket to Work, helps them to be able to transition to working while they are still getting support and also completely transition off of services. And I believe that is the goal of assistance, that we're helping them to empower, to be able to, you know, they're getting the assistance to be empowered to then transition independently. So right now we're in that this transition to train, our new disability resource coordinator, which is great. As I said, to be able to still offer these services through the pandemic was, you know, it was challenging. And what we also did, we put the Ticket to Work on a webinar. So Troy did a webinar, and then we did a Zoom Q&A so that, people interested in wanting to do the Ticket to Work program could just watch the video, and then he would do a Q&A to see if anybody had any questions, and then enroll them in the program, and that was very successful through this pandemic as well. So we got very creative with trying to do what we can to still reach out to the community. And next slide. And that's about it, what I have. As you know, our funding is federally funded. It's very secure in that sense. If there's anything with our TANF dollars, that there's a reduction, you know, it doesn't affect my staff. The only thing that we would have to adjust is how we do our summer youth employment program. So another point I also wanted to share is that we did launch our Green Careers Coalition, where we have a number of partners. And for our 2021 vision is that helping to match our goals to the Ulster 2040 plan of focusing on sector-based strategies of clusters, so healthcare, the green careers, building trades, hospitality. So focusing, hearing from employers to help us influence our training and really bring together the businesses and our training providers and community partners to work on each sector to really come together and develop training career pathways.
Great. Wow. Thank you very much. That was very impressive.
Thank you. And it's my first year, so I'll be a year.
No, you did really good. So, yeah, so there's no county contribution at all to this, huh?
No. Wow.
That is amazing.
Thank you.
You're doing a wonderful job. That was, I can't imagine how many lives are changed through that office every year. You know, starting out there, but I just can see that happening, you know, going down the road.
Thank you. And also, like, building a partnership closer with DSS and making sure that, you know, Mike Iaposi, he's wonderful, and I've worked with him in the past, and, you know, his team, we're really working together to make sure those on assistance are really, like, we're trying to build a more seamless process also with them. So that's a goal that we have as well, like, making sure individuals on assistance, you know, and SNAP, mm-hmm. you know, that we are really, you know, doing a seamless process with our services as well.
Great.
Thank
okay.
you.
Does anyone have any questions for Ms. Oliphant before we let her go for the evening?
No? Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you again very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Okay. And I'm going to invite you back every so often to see how things are going, and you can check in and let us know.
Yes, I'd love to.
All right. Great. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Take care.
All right. Bye. All right. Bye. So that ends our budget presentations for tonight. Does anyone want to take a 5-minute break, or do you just want to keep on going?
Keep going.
Okay. Okay. So, Ms. Ahmed, I'm going to ask, we're going to do the UCAT resolutions first. So Ms. Ahmed, she's been here for 2 hours waiting. So I appreciate that. So let's see if we can get those out of the way first. If everybody okay with that. Okay. So then we'll start with resolution 387, which is authorizing the chair to legislator execute an agreement with the State Department of Transportation to accept the New York State for mass transportation projects for federal fiscal year 2021, the Department of Transportation, UCAT.
So move.
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor? Any discussion?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So then is it okay if we block 388, 389, and 390?
There are four.
Is that okay with everyone? Unless there's some discussion you want to have?
I'll make a motion to block.
Since they're grant applications anyway, right? All right, so there's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, so then on resolutions 388, 389, and 390. I'll accept the motion to move on.
Motion.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. All right, so then we're going to go down to resolution 391, which is amending the capital project number 529, which is the purchase of mass transit buses and related equipment, and amending the 2020 capital fund budget, Ulster County Area UCAT. Is that the 2020 or 2021 budget? You're amending the 2020 budget.
Okay. Yeah, we're trying to get a PO out by the end of the year.
Oh, okay, got you. Okay.
I'll move the motion.
Second.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. And then we're going to do, we got one more for you, right? All right, so 393, I'm sorry?
Two more,
393, approving a public transportation agency safety plan, Department of Public Transportation for UCAT. I'll accept a motion for that.
Motion.
Legislator Corcoran, second by Legislator Litz. Any discussion on that? Actually, I got a question. What are we looking at here?
Okay, so the FTA, there's a new regulation that came out that added this rule after it came out of the FAST Act, which was fixing America's surface transportation, and it was a component of that legislation, which goes back to I think 2012. The original date was supposed to be July 20th, and then they extended it because of COVID. But it basically, we already have a safety plan. We just have to have tracking and an annual certification with our certifications and assurances that we do every year for various compliance items that both Bert and Clint work on for us or with us. So this is just another check mark that we have to certify that we have this plan. What it will actually be is our internal operations stakeholders in conjunction with Diane Beidel at the Office of Safety. And if, you know, right now we actually are going to work with the Sheriff's Office because of the uptick in opiate-related activity to offer some sort of, we're not going to require our drivers to get Narcan trained, but just awareness of, you know, the situation. Some of our riders are people who are unfortunately with addiction, so it would be beneficial. So the plan just asks us as a director, and we're a small agency, so we're doing this anyway, but to look at trends and safety issues on a larger scale. And the way we wrote our plan is we included a military matrix of safety and risk assessment. That so we'll have quarterly meetings about this topic.
Great. Thank you. Anyone else have any questions about this one? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. So then the last one for you tonight, Ms. Ahmed, would be 393, approving a public transportation agency safety plan for the Department of Public Transport. Oh, sorry, I read that one. 394, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to extend an intermunicipal agreement with the town of New Paltz to provide public transportation service to New Paltz area, the New Paltz Loop, Department of Public Transportation, UK. A move by Legislator DeLon, second in by Legislator Litz. Any discussion? How is their ridership on that with COVID?
It's not great. We're down 75%. We restarted the New Paltz Loop around back in August. We actually just added the Saturday and Sunday service, and I should have my October numbers by tomorrow. I was hoping to have them for tonight, so then we can, because the students had actually requested that we restore full weekend service, so that's when they are using the service. And it's getting better every month. It's picking up a little bit every month. We did a short-term amendment to the contract because we have been having kind of near quarterly meetings with all of our New Paltz stakeholders to really assess the future of the New Paltz Loop, because both the town, the student association, and the college are all contributing to this contract.
Right. I remember when that started way back when. Yeah.
So can I just speak to that really quick? So this one of the first whereases references the 2008 agreement, and she mentioned the student association being party to that. I was the executive director or the executive vice president of the student association that signed on to the agreement in 2008. I'm very proud of having been part of that. And I'm excited that we're continuing with the weekend service because we fought really hard for that and we didn't start with that at the time. So I'm happy to hear that.
Yes, I remember Legislator Zimmet fighting very, very hard to get that implemented back then. Yeah. Any other discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Ahmed. I appreciate you being patient and hanging around there for a couple hours while we went through all those other things. Thank you. Okay. All right. So we have Legislator Bartels. We have Resolution 232. Are we going to postpone that? Is that yours, right?
Do you want to move it for discussion and then I'll...
Yeah, all right. I'll take a motion to move it for discussion. Legislator Archer, second. DeLon, okay.
Okay, so I'm actually going to withdraw it. Sorry to make you move it for that, but I just want the moment to say that I still think this is a really extremely important issue. It's just this method of addressing it. I don't think we have a legal pathway. So I'm going to stay focused. I've spoken to Legislator Uchitel at length about this, and hopefully we'll come back to you with something that the county can actually do. So I appreciate being able to talk about it at this committee, and I'm grateful for your willingness to consider it. But upon legal advice and review, I think that this won't be a path we can take.
Okay, so the resolution has been withdrawn. Okay, so well then, thank you, Legislator Bartels. We're going to move on then to resolution number 379, which is confirming the appointment of Lisa Berger as the Director of Tourism. And I think Director Berger is still here. I don't know if she's paying attention, but she's still on the call. So I'll accept the motion to confirm her as director. There's Mary Beth Milo. Anyone else? Any seconds?
Second.
Okay. Thomas Corcoran. Any discussion on the appointment of Ms. Berger to the tourism director? No? Okay. I just want to say welcome back, Lisa, if you're still there. I remember you were there way back when I was here the first time, and you did an excellent job. And I really look forward to working with you in the future. And from your presentation tonight, it looks like you got a firm grasp on where you want the county to go, with the exception of maybe the tourism guide. But other than that, we'll work through that one. I mean, that's a challenge. That's a challenge.
Get in there again.
Well, it's a challenge, I believe. You know, I think that's just one of the challenges. Like, you know, Alan has an IS. You know, it's one of the things that we're going to have to deal with these tight budgets. And we have to take a real close look at some of these things. So anyway, any other discussion on Ms. Berger as Director of Tourism? Okay. So I'll accept all in favor.
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, thank you. And if Ms. Berger's still on, congratulations and welcome back aboard. Resolution number 380, which is confirming the appointment of Tim Wiedemann as Director of Economic Development. I don't see Tim here tonight, but those of us have worked with him know that he's a very capable young man who has done a good job with the 2040 program. And the few instances that I've had to deal with him, I've been very, very impressed with his thoroughness and his mastery of the subject that we're talking about. And I just think that he's going to do a great job as a Director of Economic Development. And I think we're going to be seeing a lot of him in this committee in the coming months, especially with Tech City. I think we're going to be seeing a little bit more of him than he would like to see of us, I think. But anyway, I'll accept a motion to confirm. Legislator Archer, second by Legislator Mayo. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, great. So 386 is the amending the 2020 Ulster County budget to adjust the annual salary of the Director of Tourism. I'll accept a motion for discussion. Is there a motion?
Motion.
Okay, Legislator Corcoran, a second. Legislator Mayo. Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Any discussion on this? Legislator Archer, then Legislator Mayo.
We're fundamentally changing the position here and changing what had been in the budget in previous years for the head of tourism at a time that we're going through the kind of changes we're going through, the challenges we're going to have from a budgetary perspective, and the fact that a significant portion of expenses we can control are salary-based expenses. Unfortunately, I can't support this recommendation at this juncture. I just think at this point in time, I don't understand why we're changing the salary of the head of tourism. And particularly, I will say that, you know, there's some conversation and there's another resolution out there. I mean, it's separate from this, but, you know, if we're really serious and we know we've got some challenges budgetarily, you know, I just can't support this change at this juncture.
Mm-hmm. Legislator Mayo.
Same thing that Lynn said, I just can't do it at this point. This is too early in the game. I've been saying no all along to other stuff, and this is just a little out of whack right now. I just can't consciously say yes to this.
Okay. Anyone else have anything they'd like to add? before I throw in my two cents. So one thing that jumped out at me tonight in our discussions with the budget analysts went over for us is that we have 4 out of 5 of our collecting bargaining units don't have contracts right now. And so that's the bulk of our employees in the county who are without a contract, without a raise. Some of them are going into their second consecutive year without anything, right? No scheduled negotiations, anything, right? So with that, I just in good conscience can't see increasing the salary of one employee by that amount of money when we're not even considering, you know, 95% of our employees when there's a situation like this. You know, that's just my opinion. I wouldn't be able to put my head on a pillow at night saying, okay, this is a justified increase at this point in time. Mr. Remsnyder worked in that job for 14 years at that salary, and he did a damn fine job, in my opinion, at that salary. And I know that there's some effort to realign that department and add some responsibilities into that department, but I really think that we should see how that works out and see if the responsibilities merit a salary increase down the road rather than put the salary increase in there and then add the responsibilities afterward. And plus, you know, again, I'll say it again. We have 4 of our 5 collective bargaining agreements that are expired right now. And that's something that we really need to address, you know, Legislator Archer.
And just to add to that, Chairman Cahill, those 4, they expired last December, and we've got one coming up. The last one of the 5 is coming up this December. So I think you're spot on.
Any other discussion, any other comments? The legislators first, Dr. Wright, then I'll get to you, okay? Thank you. Any other legislators have anything? Okay, Dr. Wright, go ahead.
Thank you. I certainly respect the views that have been shared here. I just wanted to speak a little bit about our motivation. This is coming at a time when our tourism businesses are probably the most stressed in the entire county, the ones that have been hit the hardest and taken the longest time to recover. And I really appreciate the good news we've gotten in the last few weeks about the uptick in September and October, but we know we have a really hard time ahead. And we really made the decision that we need to invest in our tourism businesses in a different way than we have before, and also to really bring together the activities of our departments of economic development, tourism, and employment and training in a way that we haven't before. And we have just a tremendous opportunity to do that with Lisa moving into that position, having now been in leadership in every single one of those departments. And so we really saw this summer, Lisa and Rick worked hard together to do webinars and technical assistance to those tourism businesses. She told you about the workforce development work that we have planned. We think this is really essential to make that industry more resilient. And we just think we have an excellent opportunity here. Tim and Lisa and Thomasine have already started mapping out a work program around bringing what for now is actually 4 separate databases that the 3 departments use to interact with Ulster County businesses together. Lisa mentioned turning Salesforce into the engine for the website, which will eliminate 2 databases that the tourism department double enters data into right now. And so we really are adding a substantial roles to that work, and much of it is roles that Lisa has already taken on in her leadership in those other departments. So we have a fair amount of confidence in what the 3 of them are going to be able to do together. So I just submit that for your consideration as you weigh this. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Any other comments or questions? Okay, so then I'm going to call the vote. All those in favor of resolution 386, which is amending the budget to increase the salary of the director of tourism. And all those opposed. Okay. And Abe, did you vote? I'm sorry, I missed it.
I did not vote. I abstained.
You abstained?
Yeah.
And can I, for the record, can I have a reason?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't realize I needed a reason. Yes. I did not. What I had hoped to do was do a little bit more comparison of the different salaries before I came in here. But I, if I need a specific reason for abstaining, it was just for wanting to do more research. But
I don't believe that's allowed. I think you're only allowed to abstain if you have a conflict.
Oh, okay. Okay, then I'll vote opposing it.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay. So on to, I got to skip over those. Okay, so we're on to resolution number 395, which is reappointing a member and alternate to the Ulster County Planning Board from the Town of Ulster, the Ulster County Planning Department. I'll accept the motion to move.
Motion.
Legislator Corcoran, second by Legislator Litz. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, thank you. Resolution 399, which is amending the 20 to 2025 capital improvement program, establishing capital project 576, which is the Enterprise West, and amending, I love that name, Enterprise West, amending the 2020 capital fund budget and the Department of Public Works. I'll accept the motion to move it. Legislator Mayo, second. Legislator Litz. Okay, any discussion on that one? Legislator Archer.
So I have, you know, reviewed all the information that I've received from everyone. And I have to say that at this juncture, I feel this is way premature to spend this kind of money in this environment. I understand that you're trying to build and look at an opportunity, but you know, in the last meeting we had around this, I had asked for some particulars on what we're spending. We're already making the school taxes whole. Everything we're doing here, we started out with this proposal the first time back in June, and it was only going to be, you know, 200, 300,000, no more, to get the building up so we could sell it. Now we have a whole proposal about, you know, what we want to do with it, that it's more than just bringing it online. But now we're talking about another 400,000. This is a money pit, and we are, the government is not great at being landlords and out there trying to develop a property. We don't have the expertise for this. And it's a high risk game as it is. Development of a property like this is a high risk game. And we're risking taxpayer dollars on this. And as much as I appreciate where you're trying to go, I think the chairman in the last meeting we're in brought up a very good point. Why aren't we doing an RFQ to see if there's development interest out there? You have a list of tenants. You've got people expressing interest. You can hand off to a developer who's willing to kind of move in that direction all the work that you all have done to get there. And we're not putting taxpayer money on the line for something that's a risky adventure. So from that perspective, I can't support in this juncture when you're asking for all other tax stabilization money, et cetera, that this just does not make sense to me from a fiscal perspective. I just can't support this.
Legislator Litz.
Yeah, I thought this first capital improvement project was to sustain the building so we can make it through the winter and protect our investment. I mean, it'd be akin to, you know, shutting your furnace off during the winter. I don't know what that gains.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I was through the site and I noticed that all the sprinkler heads were off. They, you know, from when they decommissioned the building, you know, and you have to put that building back together so it's winterized. I know that that's a big portion of what this is. Tim, is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. So,
So what? How? So excuse me, if I may, Chairman.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Sure.
Then help me to understand. We went down this road back in June. It was only going to be to bring it online. It was only going to bring it. Now all of a sudden, we've got 100,000 along with the print to develop it, become renters, to look at. I just feel like it keeps changing and shifting to suit whatever proposal you want to move forward with. And again, at a time where we're strapped for cash, we have no clue yet what the state is going to impose on us with regards to cuts. We are all waiting for a stimulus package. That is a big question mark. And we're outspending this money. I mean, we're going into 2021, and I don't think that if we continue spending this way that we're going to be able to maintain our workforce. So I just feel like this is not prudent at this juncture. Thank you.
Legislator Bartels, and then Mark, we'll let you go. Okay.
Thank you. I just want to ask a question for clarification. The dollar figures might be associated with winterizing, but this is establishing a capital project that, according to the resolution, is to redevelop the property as a hub for small-scale manufacturing and arts-related uses. That's what the resolution says.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So this is setting a larger goal than just winterization.
Mm-hmm.
Correct? Am I correct?
Yeah, you were, but I know that winterization was part of that, getting it energized and winterized. I know that was part of it, right? Yeah, there is a bigger picture here. There's no question about that. I don't think you guys are disputing that there's, setting it up for something down the road, right? Yeah. So, Mark, you were first, and Dr. Wright.
I'll make way for Dr. Wright really quickly, but I just want to say that the original kind of tranche of money was really to get the utility infrastructure separated off of the other side of Tech City, and just very minimal key heating components, etc., up and running. And this is just the very next small step. And I'll let Dr. Red talk more about that.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, just to answer Legislator Bartels' question, that larger capital project that you were referring to, that was the big picture in response to the request, the very reasonable request to say, we don't want to keep getting these nickel and dime things. We want to see the big picture. So that capital project to redevelop it is the big picture. But as we discussed, we're anticipating that this chunk is the under the current plan, the last of the chunks that we would be coming to the county for, that it's going to be the responsibility of the local development corporation to go out and seek funding for the rest of them. So this portion of it is, as Legislator Cahill said, the winterization, the getting the security system working again. It currently has about 100 faults that are flashing in it, and so it's not usable. So that needs to be repaired. So this is kind of the basics, really to steward the building. And when we think about this expenditure, we've got to think about the cost of not doing anything and weigh it against it.
Okay. Legislator Mayo, because she hasn't gone yet, and then Legislator Archer, back to you. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I get it may be the next step, but if you want me to write a check for this, I can't do it right now. I mean, just like I couldn't do it on the last resolution. I mean, 20,000 here, 400,000 here. I mean, where's the budget? Where's the process? It's silly at this point. I can't. If there's a breakdown, I didn't see it, I'm sorry. But as of right now, tonight, I'm going to be a no on it.
Well, this was presented in the capital programs pitch, right? Between when Ways and Means and Public Works met, correct?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah,
but that has to be a big breakdown for $400,000.
Yeah, I think in that committee it actually was.
I'll take a look at it.
Yeah, it's out there. I think on the OneDrive. I don't know, Fawn, is it out on the OneDrive? Do you know, for Public Works?
It must be, but I
Exactly where, I don't know either.
No, and we had asked for some additional cost breakdowns, which I have not seen yet. And I go back to, if I may, Chairman, continue.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I go back to what Mark gave us back on June 11th on 2020, alarm work, complete, provided at no cost by Safeco. HVAC, 4,000 complete. Sprinklers, 24,000 pending contract. Boiler restart, 40,000 post electrical work. Air handles and circulating loops. Oh, so this is all part of that 200 or 343,500. Then you put in the $60,000 reimbursement, which is only good if you're using the gas, which means you got to get the building started, for a total cost of 283. We were told back then, that's it. That's all we're spending right now. We're not going to be coming back for more. That was the whole point here. And now you're coming back for 400,000. We have no clue what the state cuts are. I believe in your plan. I believe what you want to try to accomplish. I just think the timing is the worst time in the world. I've had this conversation with Tim, and I'm sorry, Mark and Evelyn, we've not had the conversation, but when he and I were chatting about it, you know, looking at using next year as a way of building the outreach into the municipalities around a kind of a look-see at where economic can grow in the entire county and focusing on that. And we should have kept this building mothballed. We don't even know if it's a viable building for the next person who wants to buy it. It's like you're investing in something that someone else may tear down. They may say, look, for us to bring the building up to what we want to do here, it's going to cost us a fortune. So we don't even know. We have an idea, and I think it's an interesting idea, but I don't think now is the time that we should be taking those kinds of risks, given all the other things that are unknowns in this environment. I really, as much as I would love to do this, and I really mean that, from a fiscal responsibility perspective, I can't put the taxpayers' money at risk knowing that we're seeing surges of COVID all over the place. We're seeing our numbers tick up. I just think it's a very dicey proposition and not worth another a dime of taxpayer money to do. So sorry, that's where I'm at.
Newly appointed Director Weidman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say that I understand the hesitancy. I understand the concern. I mean, it would be surprising to me if people didn't have lots of questions about a $400,000 commitment. But I just want to be clear here that the fact is, and you know, we can debate whether it was the right decision or not, but it's true that this is now a county-owned building and property, and that that means there is a responsibility to ensure that this doesn't deteriorate. I can say that I am fully confident that there are uses for this building in the near future that represent positive economic development for our county. And I think it would be a shame if we didn't take this immediate step to move in that direction. I understand it's a commitment, but I want to point out that the discussions about the longer term liability of owning this building and the costs associated with that, and whether those should be borne by a developer or whether those should be borne by the local development corporation, are perfectly valid conversations that we should continue to have. But in the meantime, if we don't invest this amount of money to make sure that this building is maintained in a way that allows it for future use, I think we have to then at least consider the fact that the alternative is to tear down the buildings or allow them to fall into disrepair and then end up with, you know, with the challenges that that entails. So I just want to make sure that that's clear as you guys consider your decision here.
Legislator Archer. Yeah.
Oh, I appreciate that, but here's what I would say. So what's different from June till now when we were getting it up online and we were doing it? So what's changed? Now what's the 400 attached to? And the building was mothballed, and you know, it was in a decent shape, before we brought it all back online. And so what changed from, oh, this is all we're spending on it, to now you need another 400,000? Can you tell me, Mark? Because you were the one that gave us the numbers and told us, and I think we have it on tape, that this is all we're spending this year. Come on, I just want to understand. No disrespect.
I understand that. And I mean, I think the plans for kind of the minimal occupancy and what we thought about as Bob Buser is going in and out of it a bunch of times and seeing, as Evelyn said, 100 faults. And once we got the systems up and running, we saw that we needed to spend a little bit more to ensure that it doesn't be deteriorating. But again, a bulk of that other cost was just getting the electric off. And then we spent a minimal amount on some of the systems.
That was not how it was laid out. And I get things change. But again, this goes back to when we were talking about this. Then why didn't we bring engineers in to give us a full assessment before we start putting money into it? So that's all I'm saying. I think I've said my piece. So thank you for allowing me to do that.
Thanks. So any other comment on resolution number 399? Is that right?
399
is correct.
Yeah. Any other discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Second. Cahill, Corcoran, you should tell. So 4 in favor. Okay.
All those opposed? DeLong, okay.
So it passes 4-3.
Okay, thank you. Resolution number 418, which is approving the execution of a contract amendment for $42,714, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered into the county by Tyler Technologies Incorporated, formerly known as New World Systems Corporation for IS. Accept the motion to move it. Legislator Litz and Legislator DeLong second. Any discussion? Okay, then all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Resolution 419, approving the execution of a contract for $382,750 entered into the county Cubic Creative Incorporated, doing business as Bello and Company, Department of Tourism. And this is the tourism contract that Director Berger spoke of early. I'll accept the motion to move it. DeLong and Litz, any discussion? Legislator Archer, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I feel like a bit of a broken record.
Well, you're not. It's something we should all be thinking about. There's no question.
I would really, it kind of goes into the resolution that I know we're going to get to, but I just feel like I do agree we need a new website and we need to be, considering how we continue to advance tourism in the county, but I really feel like these are nice to have and nice to spend money. I'm not sure it's a need to have at this juncture, given again what we're going into. I feel a bit of a broken record, but there's a lot of spending in this budget even for next year, and it gives me great concern that we're not having conversations and potentially what if conversations, because the only thing we can control are our expenses. Now I realize that some of this is half of it is covered by I Love New York, but this to me, what did we spend doing this last year? I think about the same money. I can somebody tell me what we spent on this last year?
I certainly can. Same,
yes. Pardon me?
It was approximately the same. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but this is an annual contract that we do for our tourism promotion and marketing.
And we have, and now we have more information this got coming into this year than we had when we proved this last go around. We've had COVID, we've had some things we've had to retrench. Now we know we're going to potentially have some ongoing issues with COVID. Again, it's a nice to spend, but do we need to spend right now? And that's kind of where I'm at. I'd like to wait at least to get into January. The fact that we're kind of doing this now, it gives me a little bit of pause, and I know it's probably teed up to all kinds of things that need to happen, but we have no idea what the state is going to cut. We're proposing to spend another $400,000. I can't do it.
Legislator Mayo, then Legislator DeLon.
Basically what Lynn said, the same view again. I'd like to get into the first quarter even of 2021 and see where we're at. I understand it's important, but so is everything else that's tied to the budget, and we have to be a little creative. We have to start cutting somewhere and everywhere probably eventually. I'll be a no tonight. Thank you.
Legislator DeLon, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's quite okay. I guess for me, in the past, we always had the opportunity to meet with and kind of get a feel for what the approach was going to be. And I think that was very beneficial for this committee. And I'm disappointed that that's not happening this year.
So a couple, Legislator Luchetel, then I'll go ahead.
Yeah, just to build on Legislator DeLon's comment, I having come from this industry, I'm looking at the contract and I'm seeing things like, all right, how come website maintenance appears in a bunch of different spots? Maybe it's we're getting charged twice for the same thing, and do we need this component here? And wait, they're getting a VIG on the ad spend, and I'm inclined to pick it apart, which is what we would do. To Legislator DeLon's point in that conversation. So I agree. However, on the whole, I know that we have a very critical tourism and lodging industry here that's really counting on us to make a commitment to them. And I just couldn't see us wholesale not supporting that effort by holding this contract back.
Yeah. Legislator Lutz, and then I'm going to go. Okay.
Well, it's the third largest revenue generator for this county, I know about COVID, and I know that but there are budget constraints, and probably the worst thing you want to do is decrease our revenue in this time.
Yeah. So my concern is that we haven't seen all of the numbers yet from Director Berger said we only have second quarter numbers, and when we see the third quarter numbers, she said she thinks that they're going to be robust and they're going to be better than the second quarter, I think is how she portrayed that to us. And, for me, I would feel much more comfortable knowing what we're looking at, because that, to me, I think the third quarter number is going to be much more accurate as to what we're going to see in 2021 than the first and second quarter numbers of 2020, because people have adjusted to COVID. People have adjusted their lifestyles. And I do agree 100% that people who can get in their car and drive somewhere for a day and stay in a little boutique hotel or a bed and breakfast or one of the local hotels and go pick apples or go on the rail trail or, just walk around the small towns in the area. I absolutely believe that that's happening. I'm out and about and I see it. I think that, in some instances, you can be penny wise and pound foolish. And I think not supporting the tourism department would, in this instance, in this environment, especially, and I know that there's financial restraints, but as far as, the third largest revenue generator in the county, that jumps out at me. And I just don't know how you cut the legs out from under that, you know? I just don't know. Legislator Litz and then Legislator Archer.
Well, I mean, just to build upon what you said, people are coming, they're going to the boutiques, they're going to the spas, they're going to pick apples. And then they come back and they say, you know, I don't want to live in New York City anymore. I want to move upstate. So they're going to go to where they know. And look at the number of businesses and individuals that have moved out of New York City and moved into Ulster County. Ulster County is the quickest, largest growing population in the state, if not the Northeast. Ulster County is, because people are exiting New York City and they're coming up here to live. And I believe that's because in the past, our tourism bureau has put forth the best foot for Ulster County. And to take the third largest revenue generator and then turn off the switch, I think that's going to hurt us a lot.
Legislator Archer, then Legislator Corcoran, you haven't spoken yet. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I just want to say I understand all the points being made tonight as Legislator Litz just said. I mean, I see the booming building going on here in Ulster County as a building inspector here, and just we're going right back and to repeat what everybody else is saying. It's the third largest revenue source, and I know we depend on it usually in Marlboro, so I'm going to be a yes.
Legislator Archer.
So what I would hope is that, Legislator DeLon said, why haven't they come before us and kind of walked us through what it is they're proposing? So fine, we have today no idea what the cuts are to us. We're being asked to propose to move forward on a contract that we will have some obligations going into next year. What's another month? Let them come, let them present to us, let them tell us what they're looking to do. Let's at least have some questions. And who knows, perhaps by then we'll have an understanding of what the cuts and implications are to this year and potentially looking at where we're going into next year. We're being asked to do this, and at the same time, we're looking at next year's budget. I'm not saying I agree with you. I think it's important. I think economic development is important, but I also am concerned about the taxpayer. Would the taxpayer feel that's a good investment when they can't pay their taxes here? Or when we have to raise taxes because we don't have our general fund is depleted? I just feel like, you know, we're rushing to make some decisions, albeit important ones to the county, to our initiatives. And I just feel like we really need to just take a breath, take a step. Let's do as proposed and see if we can move forward.
So I'm going to recognize myself. So one of the things that was also brought that I wasn't aware of until today was it's not only the third largest revenue generator, it's also the third largest employer, right? So I mean, how do we – I just don't know how we ignore that, because Legislator Archer said, how would the taxpayers feel if they knew we were spending this kind of money on tourism? Well, if it meant that, you know, some of the third largest employers were going to be losing their jobs, I think they'd be pissed that we didn't spend this money on tourism. That's my opinion, because, you know, we know there are a lot of communities depend on tourism, and they depend on tourist-related activities from one end of this county to the other, right? And so to me, I know it's tough, right? But I think, okay, so I look at what IS did. You know, IS cut to the bone there, right? And so there are sacrifices that have to be made in some places so we can do things like this. So we can, you know, make sure that our tourism industry, which is the third largest revenue generator and the third largest employer in the county, doesn't fold up and go away. I'm concerned that we're not spending more money on the travel guide, quite honestly, you know? I'm more concerned with that than supporting this contract with Bello, quite honestly, as far as the overall economy goes, the overall economic development of the county, right? Legislator Corcoran?
So again, I wasn't here last year, but obviously they're not asking for any more money. And I think they've got a lot of work ahead of them this year coming out of pandemic to bring these people back. So I think they're going to be working twice as hard to bring these people back to the community and to do what they're doing. So with no more being asked, again, I'm good with it, but I'd be on board with the brochure myself too.
Okay, thank you. I think Legislator Bartels, and then I think Dr. Wright, you had your hand up. Yeah, okay, so Legislator Bartels.
I was just wondering, and following on Legislator Archer's comment and suggestion, is it possible to get Belo to come and make a presentation? Because in reading the Schedule A of this contract, it sounds, I have to be honest, I didn't compare it exactly to last year's contract, but the Schedule A, I don't see a great distinction. You know, it's talking about brochures and
no, you and I discussed this,
Tracy. It seems like a standardized contract.
There's nothing in there to say because of COVID, right? And I think that that's a very good point. And so I will request that no matter what happens with this resolution tonight, that we do, you know, get them in there, if it's postponed or whether we pass it or whatever. I would definitely want to hear what they're doing differently based on COVID versus previous years, because how many years have we had this contract, Mark? Do you know? Anybody know? I know they said they've used them.
Third or fourth.
Yeah, right. So I would definitely like to see, you know, the adjustments they've made to adjust to the new tourism. Yeah.
Then I would propose that we.
Well, hold on a second. Legislator DeLon.
Sorry.
That's
it. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that everyone knows that I'm very much in favor of tourism. I guess for me, I think back to many years ago and watching a presentation, and there seemed to be a real emphasis on golf. And it didn't seem to me like that made a lot of sense then, you know, for a dying sport. No offense to you guys, but you know, that's a fact. And so I don't know what this contract is about and where the emphasis is. And it would be nice to know for us to spend this much money, to be asked to spend this much money. Tell us what you're going to do. And things are different. They're different from the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah, so,
by the way, Jim, right, so golf
I just want to let Dr.
is flourishing.
Where are you living?
Go out to Apple Greens. They're packed every single day.
You're right. They are.
Well, you got to remember what Rick Remsnyder did before he worked for the county, right?
Yeah.
He was a writer for Golf Digest. So, Dr. Wright, and then I think Tracy had your hand up. I just want to let Dr. Wright's been waiting quite a while. So, go ahead.
Thanks, Legislator Cahill. I just wanted to reply to the dismay that they're not here. I apologize. It didn't even occur to me to invite them, but I'm sure they would be glad to speak with this committee. I just want to make sure everybody, I think you all know, they are the same firm that we've been working with before. They've changed their name. In the meanwhile, they were Cubic. They're now Belo. We really took a hard look at all 14 of the firms that applied and really came to the conclusion that they were the ones at the work that they have been doing. They're the developers of the Seek for Yourself brand. They develop all of our, marketing collateral and do the ad placement for us. That's the bulk of this contract. And that's why Schedule A looks the same as last time Schedule A, because it is the same kind of framework content contract, and then the content within it and the emphasis changes year by year. This year, the emphasis on the redevelopment of the website, for example. The members of the Tourism Advisory Board who were on the RFP committee were particularly insistent in their recommendation that we stick with the same team, that they're really, really pleased with their work and wanted to see us stick with them going forward. I'm sure we can arrange to get them to come and you can hear more from them. But given the continuity, it just didn't occur to me.
All right, Legislator Bartels.
The contract takes effect in January of 2021. So is there any harm in holding it a month to have them come to next month's committee meeting?
You know, that just gives us the certainty that it's in place by January 1 and the ability to go ahead without any interruption. as well as to begin discussing the work plan for next year with them. We want to get those discussions on the website going as soon as we can now that IS is freed up from its election duties, because they're a part of that work as well.
But in theory, wouldn't that happen if it passed in December?
Well, here's what I'm going to say. Is there anybody that's not going to support, you know, funding this company, you know, that they went to the RFP and this is the one they picked? Are we not going to support tourism and their advertising budget? I mean, come on, we are, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So, I mean, I think that my opinion is I'm all for getting them here, and I'll block an hour in the next meeting for them, or I'll call a special meeting even if you'd like. But I think that we should, you know, my opinion anyway, is that, you know, we move it along so the plans that the tourism department has can be put in place and they can start moving forward there. I mean, if they have to make plans, you know, that include IS and some of the other things, you know, Legislator Mayo.
I'm good with that. And I appreciate your phrase, you know, penny smart, but pound foolish. And that's not what it's about. I just want to question everything we're doing because we don't know what next year looks like.
I agree.
And I love tourism. I talk about it all the time. And I said it even last year, I think, when we were doing this contract. And I think we did it late last year. So it is possible. Still put it in place. Just making comment. But I would be good with at least having a talk next month if we can set that up.
So, Senator Dawn, go ahead.
I'd like to make a motion to postpone it. And I'm fine with a special meeting if that works for this group. I'm willing to do that, but I'd like to see a unified vote here on this contract.
I'll second the postponement.
Okay, any discussion on the postponement?
Yeah, I have discussion.
Okay, go ahead.
If we postpone it till next month, that puts it like the week before Christmas, if it passes, and then you need to get the contract done before the end of the year. So, I don't know. They're going to work on Christmas? I don't know. It just seems like an awful short period of time to put together a contract before the first of the year.
Is it possible to have a special meeting in 2 weeks, next week, tomorrow?
We have budget meetings
every
day next week, unless you guys want to meet during the day. And then the following week, are we into Thanksgiving? I have to look at a calendar.
Well, the following week is session.
After session.
We don't vote on it in session. It's going to December.
Yeah.
Deputy Ryder, you had your hand up there.
I don't know if this is possible, but maybe since this is a Zoom meeting, I don't know if this company could come to Ways and Means, because I think it goes there next, and give a presentation, or again, just to get it past this month in session. As Legislator Litz said, there's a lot of work that has to be done to turn around this contract and get it fully executed by January 1st.
Okay, is there any other discussion on the postponement? Okay, all those in favor of postponing it 1 month? Opposed?
I'm opposed.
Opposed.
I'm willing to try to move it along and get on the same page. Sorry.
Okay.
I'm starting to fall asleep a little bit.
That's all right.
Do you have the vote, Fawn?
The vote is 2-5, so it fails.
Okay. Any further discussion on the resolution? Unamended. Legislator Archer.
You know, I get the contract, but here's what I would say, that this, the county attorney knows how to get a contract done when he needs to get it done quickly. Doesn't mean you can't keep moving forward. Doesn't mean the contract can't be worked on while we have the opportunity to hear what they're proposing for the kind of money we're looking to spend here. Who knows? We may even have more insight into what our cuts will be, et cetera. I'm a little puzzled why we're rushing. And I get it. I agree. I think tourism is important, but not to give everybody a good understanding of what we're paying for. At the same time, and we know the county attorney has done this in the past, that they've been in the midst of writing the contract pending a review. I just feel it's unfortunate that we're not going to have the opportunity to really understand what's in this contract and where we're.
So I think Legislator Litz, go ahead.
Well, what I would make as a suggestion is we call the question tonight, and if it makes it out of committee, they can make a presentation to us between now and legislative session, and then we'll all vote on at session based upon our feelings on the question and their presentation.
So this resolution has to go to Ways and Means as well. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then Legislator Archer, would you be opposed to having a presentation at your meeting?
We've got a very robust meeting. It's going to be tough. So I think, you know, once again, let's kick it to Ways and Means and let them be the decision maker. It's unfortunate. I'm not sure that we have a pretty full schedule with the budget right now. Mm-hmm. To take on another presentation, let's have a special meeting before we vote on it.
Legislator, you should tell.
Yeah, I would just, I completely agree that we should hear from the firm and we should talk to them and understand it better. And if it could have been before us a month earlier, or if that could have happened already, I agree that that would have been better. But the situation that we're in now, you know, to hold up voting for it, whether in this committee or another, or in session, would be to imply that the content of that meeting will change the way that we vote on it, or potentially change the way that the contract is written. You know, so if we, like, let's say something comes up in that meeting and we're like, oh, we'd really like to see, you know, you maybe you can change this to here or change that to there. That then is another period of time. It's just, I don't see it realistically happening. I don't see this working without us voting for it in the November session in both committees. And I'm not saying kick it to Ways and Means. I think it should be supported here and there.
Yeah, you know, the only thing I'm going to say is that this firm isn't strangers to the county. This will be the fourth year that the county has worked with them. Their work product is evident. And I'm pretty sure that if, you know, Director Berger requested that they make some adjustments to their methods for advertising and other things that they deliver to the county to adjust for COVID, I'm sure they would do it. I mean, you know, they're a loyal vendor to the county at this point, you know, and I think that it's important that we understand that we do have a relationship with them as well, right? So hold on, I got a bunch of hands at once here. I think that Legislator Mayo, then Bartels, Litz, and then Archer. No, you good? Okay, so Bartels, Litz, and then Archer.
Well, I just want to say that, you know, it is a little concerning to me that this contract appears to be potentially exactly the same as the last contract and doesn't actually reflect the things that were represented that they were going to do. It doesn't talk about website redesign. It talks about three brochures that are going to be distributed across the county, updating of Ulster County Alive. So we ought to have a contract that actually reflects the goals of the department and the plan, the work plan that they're actually going to do. So I don't know if this is just a regurgitation of last year's contract or not, but that should certainly be fixed.
I thought that Legislator Berger was clear in saying that they were not going to rebuild the website. I thought that she said that. So, I thought she did say that. Did she say that? One of you guys that might know? I don't know.
I think what she said was, if I could, that the development of the online guide was not in this contract.
Right.
I think that's what she meant. I think that's... But she that the website was
to the website.
There is an update to the website in the
okay. Country. Okay. Yeah. So we had Legislator Litz.
Oh, I'm next.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to call the question.
Okay. So then I had a couple people that saw their
hands up. Let me make a comment.
Okay.
In every county contract, if we don't like what they're doing, or we
want,
and they won't, 30 days.
Right.
And the contract. There's a termination clause in every contract the county writes. So if they're not doing what we think we want them to do, they're done. We'll get another one. This is a company we worked with 3 other years before. They've been very respondent to our needs and our quest. This is not somebody new that we don't know. And I think they'll bend over backwards to provide us with whatever we need to increase our tourism in the county. I would just like to tonight. And if we don't like what they're doing in the end of January, terminate the contract.
Okay, Legislator Archer, and then
I don't think that's a bad idea, Legislator Litz. If long as we have a commitment that at the next economic development meeting, they will be here presenting what they're proposing for 2021.
And so I think Dr. Wright has to answer that question.
I'm sure we can arrange that.
Okay.
Rick Remsnyder used to bring them there every quarter to report to us. I don't see that changing.
Yeah. So I think, I think the whole COVID threw a monkey wrench into, the energy industry is on their ear right now. We all know that. And they're trying to bounce back and they're trying to become innovative and they're trying to do things to change things around. So, I think they're going to get their sea legs back pretty soon. From what I see traveling around, they certainly are. The tourism is coming right back. It's as strong as I've ever seen it this time of year, really.
We are the fastest growing county in the Northeast. So somebody's got to be doing something right.
Okay. So Legislator Archer, and I think we're going to call the then question.
All I want to just make clear is that if, in fact, there is something we're concerned about, we've already approved it. And so unless we get an agreement with the execs administration that if there's something that's of concern or the contract would have to be modified or something pops up and we realize that the kind of money that we want to spend, maybe we won't do everything, maybe we'll just focus on the website, that at least there is an opportunity that we can have that conversation should we have more information at that point in time. Mm-hmm. Then okay. If we can do that, I can live with moving it here and go from there.
Yeah, well, I think, I think we'll call them in and have a discussion with them and we'll take it from there. And the next meeting, they'll be on the agenda. Legislator DeLong?
I'll make a motion.
Okay. A second?
I'll second it.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Opposed? Is there any opposed?
Okay.
Okay, good. Okay, so then we're going on to the last resolution of the night, which is resolution 428, which was submitted by Legislator Bartels, and it's setting a public hearing on a proposed local law number 16 of 2020, local law amending the Ulster County Charter and the Ulster County Administrative Code by deleting Article, 39, sorry. I got to the IX and got screwed up. 39 from each Department of Tourism and amending the Ulster County Charter and the Ulster County Administrative Code with respect to Article 17, Department of Economic Development, to be held on Tuesday, December 8th at 6:05 p.m., 2020 at 6:05 p.m. Is there a motion to move this?
I'll move for discussion.
Is there a second? A second from Legislator Mayo. Okay, so discussion. Legislator Bartels, I'm going to request that the folks on the committee have an opportunity to speak first, and then because they were provided this resolution, and I sent an email out asking them to take some time to review it and call if they had any questions. So go ahead. Nobody has their hand up anyway. Go ahead.
I'd just like the opportunity, despite the fact that I'm feeling considerably less articulate at this point, to...
I don't know why.
We've worn you down.
Wait a minute. I didn't think that was possible.
A little bit of the background in my thinking on this and a little bit of, the history in this. This is something that I've been thinking about for a long time that I've brought up in our caucus on repeat occasions over the years,
and was actually a part of the discussion related to the creation of the Department of Economic Development. I want to begin by saying that I really think that this is the way we should move, and that I think of this as elevating the priority of tourism by putting it as a component of economic development. If you look at the tourism, and it's too late now to get into all the details or to recite to you, but if you look at your budget book or online under the Department of Tourism, even in the 2021 proposed budget, we're still operating on this relic of an idea. And I'm not saying we're operating in practice. It's just on paper, we're still operating in this relic of idea of tourism as a marketing component to attract these tourist dollars that are that key component of our sales tax revenue. But tourism is so much more than that. And I am speaking to the choir when I speak to this committee and to those from the executive's office who are present. Tourism is so much more than that. It doesn't just drive visitors' dollars. It's a way of attracting new businesses. It's a way of bolstering existing businesses, not just to tourist spend. It's a way of identifying quality of life problems. And I believe that the right place for this department is not as a separate silo, not as its own department, but just like in New York State under ESD, there is a division of tourism. And what I'm proposing is a lateral move for tourism. I'm not proposing, even though that's not in this before us right now, I'm not proposing budgetary changes. I'm not proposing cuts. I'm not proposing removing personnel. I am talking about giving the director of tourism a deputy title under the director of economic development, but an added title of director division of tourism, of maintaining those budgets separately, similar as we do with real property, and then of allowing the director of economic development the latitude to take the time to evaluate efficiencies that I think are naturally happening anyway, that are a part of all these discussions that we're having on a regular basis, and I think are functionally naturally happening within this executive's departments. I've spoken to many of you already. I spoke to the executive about this some time ago, and I understand that the executive's department now would like a little time with this. And wherever this goes right now, I would like to continue this conversation because, again, I'm committed to the belief that this is the right way to go with this future division under the Department of Economic Development. And I believe it bolsters both. I think it's a natural progression and a smart right sizing. I think it's the right thing to do. So thank you.
Thank you, Legislator Bartels. Does anyone have any other comments that they'd like to make at this time? So I'll just add that I had conversation with both Tim and Evelyn on this, and don't disagree that what Tracy's talking about here. I think that we have to really look at that and, you know, put an emphasis on tourism. And as an economic development engine, I think we kind of, you know, talked about that earlier with the previous resolution, where we understand that it is an economic driver in the county and there is importance to it, and it should be, you know, on equal footing with economic development and part of every discussion, right? And I agree. And I just think that as I put in my email to you folks on the committee, and I think Tracy, you got it as well, you know, that I think that as the folks who are going to have to, you know, work on the organization of that and also then administer that change, I think that they should be part of the conversation and letting, you know, as with the legislature as a partner to see how we can do this moving forward. So it's something that we all are comfortable with, something that we all agree on, and something that will be beneficial inevitably to the economic development and tourism industries in the county, right? You know, for that reason, I'm going to recommend that we postpone this a month. And then Legislator Bartels, you know, we'll figure out a way where we can get in some, you know, some deeper discussion with Mr. Wiederman and Ms. Berger and I guess Dr. Wright, maybe even Pat himself, you know, on how we want to address this, right? because I don't think that anybody disputes that economic development and tourism go hand in hand. They do. And so I think that we just want to make sure that we're, this is a pretty drastic change, and there's going to be some ramifications within the industry when this happens. There, those folks, if you talk about them, I'm sitting here thinking, we didn't discuss this during the presentation from the budget analyst about a bed tax, or, those guys would be, they'd storm the building again like they did last time, right? And so when we talk about doing things like this, we have to consider, the folks who are in that industry and how it will impact them. So I think, for that reason, I'm going to request that we postpone this a month, have an opportunity to talk to some more stakeholders on this. And then, we'll revisit it, next month or January or whenever we're done discussing it. You got to mute there, Herb.
Did you put that in the form of a motion?
I will make a motion that we postpone this for 1 month, pending further discussion with the executive's office and the Departments of Economic Development and Tourism.
Well, then I'll second that motion.
Okay. Any discussion on that? Postponement. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, and thank you very much, Tracy. It's 10 o'clock, and I know you have a young one, and you got to get up early, and I know those of you guys that have children, this has been a long day. We've been at meetings for 4.5 hours now here. And we covered a lot tonight in this committee. And I think we really did a good job. We got a lot of information. And if we all soaked in, it'll be a miracle because there was a lot there. But I just want to say thank you very much for your patience on such a long meeting. And it's an important time of the year for us. We all know that. There's a lot of stress involved with the budget and a lot of, discussions that have to be had. And I don't want anybody to think that I don't appreciate that input, because I do. It does help me with my future decisions every time. And I consider them, and I just wanted to say thank you to everybody who was here tonight and hung out there and did all this work. Thanks.
Thank you.
Litz.
Having said that, my dinner is being cold stone cold for hours, and I'll make a motion for adjournment.
Okay.
I would like to spend some more time with you people.
Right. All right.
Second.
Okay, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thanks again, everybody. I appreciate it.
Hey, Jim. Thank you. Jim, we used to be able to go over to Santa Fe to do the visiting, but.
That's right. That's right.
Everybody stay safe and healthy. Okay. Take care.
Take care.
Take care. Bye.